and operate in association. Society to come and interact with them, understand their challenges and what is it that as a portfolio committee we can assist. And as indicated in the last meeting that in December we had interaction with Mr. Prinsloo from and delegation from Mula Association regarding the challenges that they face with our state entity in terms of manufacturing enough vaccines for the ships, and again we have met with the Horse Racing Association. They had the same problem of horse sickness, which they will brief us in detail and see how, as a portfolio committee, we can work with them to mitigate some of the challenges. But I should mention that the previous committee, they have had interactions with the with the Wool Growers Association. There was an intervention that was done and there were agreements that they've reached from with the portfolio committee. We would actually want as you present just tell us how far are you with those agreements that you had with the previous portfolio committee. So I'm now going to, we're going to have the presentation starting with the National Wool Growers Association. But before we go there, I would like us to acknowledge the apologies. We have an apology from the DP, DM, who's over outside the country. We have apology from OBP CEO is outside the country too. We have minister, they've got a briefing, cluster briefing, because there is a cluster briefing after SONA. So now, from now until 1 o'clock is the economic cluster, which are interacting with the media around the SONA issue. So that is the apologies that we have received, and I'm going to allow DG to introduce his team, and from there would allow our visitors to introduce themselves. Let me introduce members of portfolio committees to you before you can introduce yourself. At the last end, we have Nkosi Honorable Mandela. We have Honorable Youngblood. We have Honorable Stein. We have Honorable Ramukhasi. We have Honorable Matawan. So wasn't expecting other members because we've not received any apology from them. We have our officials from Parliament who are seated next to me. So my name is Machweni Rosinath Menya. I'm the chairperson of the portfolio committee. I'm now going to allow DG to introduce his team and followed by the leader of the Wool Growers Association. DG.
Thank you. Good morning, Honorable Mutev. Thank you very much for the kind welcome words here. It's very nice for us as industry to be part of your committee today and engage with you some of our problems. With me, I've got next to me Dr. Charlotte Nkuma. She is actually currently with the poultry industry, but also the vice chairman of the Animal Health Forum. Now, the Animal Health Forum consists of all the livestock industries in South Africa, and on behalf of actually all the livestock industries, red meat, pigs, goats, sheep, she represents actually then a very big part of our industry today, and she will then do a presentation on the whole, on behalf of the whole industry. Next to her is our CEO of the Wool Growers, Mr. Leon de Beer, and he will mainly then focus on our programs that are running currently in the disadvantaged areas, in the communal areas of South Africa regarding our wool sheep projects. I'm the chairman of the National Wool Growers in South Africa. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Prinsloo and your team. Thanks, Gigi, for the introduction. the association for us, they are not yet here, so we'll introduce them when they come in. So I'm now going to... Okay.
I'm sorry, can I apologize? I just want to inform you that since yesterday and this morning, NEMPO, one of our committee members, was seriously not well this morning also. So I think we might be receiving a signal because she had to ask to talk to her. She was not well.
The apology will be noted. As Honorable Tomane.
Tomane, yes.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Ramakos. We're now going to allow the Wool Growers Association to present.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think the most of the talking will be done by Charlotte, but a short introduction about the livestock industry is that I think you must note that is the biggest commodity in South Africa, and I've got almost a turnover on consumer level of about 50 billion rand. And secondly, about 60-40 ratio between formal and informal production in South Africa. So that in itself shows the importance of the industry. Now, especially the wool industry are related to the OIE, who is International Disease Control Committee with the head office in Paris. And we have to play according to international rules, and you will quite remember issues about foot and mouth about 2 or 3 years ago, and I must admit today the good work of Dr. Morisani and Dr. Maja, who actually turned around, and that we are again into the international area and we can export our wool anywhere in the world. You will also remember the issues about Rift Valley fever a few years ago, which to our mind isn't yet really put to bed, but leave it there. I also want you to note, Mr. Honorable Chair, that in South Africa there are about 613,000 households that farms with cattle, about 215,000 with sheep, about 429,000 households got goats, about 112,000 have got pigs, and this is according to the census of 2011. So this will show you how important it's for us then as an industry that we have a sound biosecurity system running in South Africa, of which only the poor biological products play a very, very important role. It's also very important to note that we are in the production side of it, and that we've got a responsibility to our consumers in South Africa for food safety. So if we don't comply with good biosecurity measures on farm level, that can have a knock-on effect to our whole South Africa and the consumers out there. Therefore, Mrs. Honourable Chair, I think the importance of this meeting cannot be underestimated for us producers in South Africa to engage with Honourable Support and as well as you as decision makers, that we get to an agreement as to how and when we can resolve the issues of Honourable Support. And Madam Chair, with this, if you allow me to give the microphone to Dr. Charlotte Nkuna, she will then elaborate on the issues regarding the Animal Health Forum and the whole issue, on all issues of what we are actually problems with Honest Work. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Good morning, Honourable Jefferson. As Mr. Pinslow has already introduced the subject, I think this issue of honor support and the industries go a few years back, and progressively over the years we have not been able to get to a point where all parties are satisfied with the development. From the Animal Health Forum side, there are few issues that we would like to put on the table, and that we hope will then be addressed by the committee. As you all know, that Honest Support is a very important entity, not only for the Department of Agriculture, but also for farmers, because it provides vaccines that are not being produced by any other. So in terms of, and these are vaccines for very important diseases, and as such, if things are not going well there in terms of vaccine production, it then affects a whole lot of people. We would like to start by looking at the various issues. For instance, looking at the production of the vaccines, we're looking mainly at things like blue tongue as well as horse chicken vaccines. And these vaccines, we've been struggling to get the right quantities at the right time, and that has been going on for a few years. We've had several engagements with the entity, and we've tried to work together to get to a point where parties are satisfied. But it seems that it may be issues that may be beyond the entity's control, because even if they try very hard, we don't seem to be getting there. There are also issues of the communication in terms of the vaccine availability that we don't seem to get the communication going out to the farmers on regular enough to update them in terms of what is going on. So you farmers would phone OBP, and then OBP would then direct them also to the distributors, and so it goes on. And I think that is something that we need to look at and try and find streamlined way of that communication to happen. We also are looking at issues of in terms of the fact that sometimes the vaccine is there in the chain, but then that's not very clear where it's sitting, whether it's sitting at the distributor or whether it's sitting in the co-op, and you find that sometimes some co-ops have more than they need, and that also perpetuates the problem. And for the industries, really, what we would like is to really get an understanding of how big the problem is, and what is it that needs to be done to actually sort it out? Because it's not only, I mean, OBP needs to be quite a good company that would even export products to other countries, and I think that is also decline. And I think it's important that we get to understand what exactly are the issues, and also to find a way of working together to find those solutions. And it's very difficult to assist if one does not have an understanding of exactly what the problem is. And I think in this room today, we would need to get to the point where we understand what the issues are and we seek solutions for those issues. And we're talking about looking at, do we need to get expertise in there to assess in terms of getting the vaccines produced again? If there are issues in the production line, what are those issues and what is it that needs to be done to get those issues sorted out? And we also, because of the type of vaccines that are produced there, you find that most they are produced only by under support and various reasons. And at the time it was very strategic that it was that way. But does it still work? Do we need to look at other ways of doing things? And what are those ways that need to be looked at to be able to find solutions? And you will hear about orphan vaccines, which are the vaccines that only under support produces. And are there other ways of doing that? Can we look at how others can assist if there is a problem with production of those vaccines? So I think in essence, we really have to say the farmers are down on their knees. They're actually really struggling. And because, for instance, the blue tongue came, but it came a little late and it was too few doses to even start to make a dent in the market. But we need to get to a point where we have a plan moving forward. And I'm looking forward. I know that my colleagues from OEP have got answers to some of these questions. And I'm looking forward to starting the engagement with them to actually get to a point where we start looking at concrete solutions. Thank you.
Good morning, Honourable Chairman, and members of the House. Thank you for this opportunity. I think this is a good news story that I would like to share with the Portfolio Committee. We also had an engagement with the Director General of the Department recently, and I think it's an important story to take note of in terms of success development. I'm going to focus on the work that we are doing in the Eastern Cape, in the communal areas of the Eastern Cape. But I think this is a program that certainly can be rolled out to all the provinces where wool sheep farming is important, and that's almostly all over South Africa. But I think this is a wonderful example and a template to be rolled out. Firstly, in terms of the national wool growers, we are the representative body of the wool producers in South Africa with about 4,300 commercial members, voluntary membership, that is how membership works. And then we have 756 communal sharing sheds that are members of the NWGA. They are a member as a sharing shed, but they each have about, on average, 20 members. That means there are more than 15,000 voluntary members in the communal areas that are members of the organization. And in this, we say that we are truly representative of all farmers producing wool, commercial, communal, and small-scale emerging. We export most of our product to China, but also the Czech Republic, Italy, etc. And this means that this commodity is an important earner of foreign currency. And I always say that the wool sheep producers in the most rural areas of South Africa earn an income from foreign currency because their wool is also exported. This is our wool production over the years, for the last 10 or so years. And you can see that we have 3 years since 2010 to 2012 where there was a drastic decline in the production. And this maybe also supports what we are so dearly wanting in terms of honest to poor, because that is the effects of Rift Valley fever that actually has swept through our flocks, especially in the Eastern Cape. And we lost a lot of production through that, but we are recovering. And for the past year, it's not added here yet, but for the past year we have produced more than 50 million kilograms of wool. The challenges in terms of what we are doing is firstly the quality and quantity of wool produced in the communal areas is really something that we need to address. The wool is there, but the quality and the quantity is not good. A lot of their wool through the informal market, selling their wool to traders at low prices of as low as 8 rand to 12 rand 50, while the average price of communal farmers marketing through the formal auction is almost 40 rand a kilogram. They have a lack of infrastructure, and with this I mean sharing infrastructure with the sharing shed, the equipment inside, dipping facilities, etc. They need guidance and training and mentorship in harvesting, classing their wool, because this is where you prepare your trip for the export market, and you have to prepare it according to the standards of that. Also to assist them with market access, not the informal trade, but formal market auction that is held in Port Elizabeth on a weekly basis during the season. They need a lot of support in terms of knowledge and information, therefore training and mentorship is important. Stock and wool theft, Honorable Chair, we have in the last few months had a lot of trucks that have been hijacked from commercial and communal farmers, stock theft, violently breaking into sheds and so on, taking the wool, and then it's easy, you cannot identify the wool and it will find its way to the market again. Also a huge problem, predation and stray dogs, especially in and around towns where the stray dogs is a major problem. And then our industry currently contributes about 7 million per annum. Since 1997 they have been contributing to the Wool Trust to run this training and development program. What do we do? I'm not going into detail there, I'm just going to show you the results, but certainly what we do is we have a training and mentorship program. And we are an accredited service provider to AgriSeda, and we do a lot of training in the training of sheep shears and wool classing, and we have managed to produce for the past more than a decade the world champion in sheep shearing. As you might know, that sheep shearing is a sport as well, affiliated to SASCOC, and we are proud to say for more than a decade we have produced the world champion, and that's how good our training is. Then secondly, we have a genetic improvement program currently supported by government through the Department of Land Reform, whereby we introduce 3,000 rams per annum in communal flocks on an exchange basis, removing an inferior ram from the flock and replacing it with a quality ram, and thereby we are impacting on the quality and the quantity, which is a major problem in that area. And also we assist farmers with market access by introducing them to the brokers, the wool brokers that they have. The two major brokers are CMW and BKB, and the producers can then decide which broker is their choice, and they assist them to prepare them for the market and put it on the auction for sale. We also assist them in terms of resource management and also basically infrastructure through the CAD program. We have constructed and upgraded more than 300 sheds in the communal areas since 1997. This is the first step in terms of production, is to have proper infrastructure to produce. I'm here to finish here. I would just like to show you the impacts of this program. Firstly, if you look at the table that I have there, you will see in 1997-98 these farmers marketed about 200,000 kilograms of wool through the formal auction system valued at 1.5 billion rand. And last season, the 200,000 kilograms grew over the years to 3.8 million kilograms of wool, and the income from 1.5 million to 138 million rand. And I think this is very significant. I emphasize again, it's money earned from foreign currency. It puts money into the pockets of households, improving their livelihoods in the most rural and extensive farming areas of South Africa. Then social impacts that we have. This was a study done by the Rhodes University. The study was done in 2004, repeated in 2005, and currently the Wool Trust has made funds available so that we can do this investigation is on the go, or the study is on the go again. But the income from sales and wool of the income from sales of wool and mutton was about 47% of the internal income of a household in 2004. The other income is mainly from grants and pensions, etc., etc. This increased to 59% in 2006 and 65% in 2009, and I'm very curious to know what it will be in 2014 as the study is currently being conducted, and I'm sure it will have increased quite drastically. Other social indicators, children going to bed hungry, decreased from 43 to 27%, households with savings accounts increased from 56% to 77%, and households that had to borrow money for school fees decreased from 78 to 52%. Then in terms of job creation, one of the most important objectives of government in South Africa currently is to create jobs. And although this is sort of evaluated as an industry with high potential but relatively low job creation, we have managed to increase jobs quite significantly over the past number of years. One of our brokers keep record of the number of texts they write out to individual farmers who market through the formal auction system, and it has increased by 2,000 new individuals over the past 2 years. Taking into account the involvement of brokers in those areas where new jobs have been created, they have never been really involved there. We also have a new animal health organization or company that has been established there. You have more shearers, you have more wool classes, people assisting us with marketing, transporting animals, etc., etc. So this is really an impact that government should prosper or should cherish. To conclude, I say wool is a non-perishable product. You can market when opportune. It's an export product. It earns foreign currency for households in the most rural areas, and I've elaborated on that. It's new money into the economy of rural people. People's also stimulating new businesses. Over the past two centuries, wool has been the key to the development of towns in the rural South Africa, and it has also even been instigating the development of a new commercial bank established because of that. And why we are here, Chairman, Lady Chair, is to really ask the continued support of government. I'm not too sure how far we are with the memorandum of understanding that we're currently in development with the Director General of DAF, because we need to continue this program. We cannot continue with industry funds only. We need the support of the national government, the provincial government, to continue with our program. And this is our story, and we feel quite proud of what we have achieved. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Honourable Chair, I think why we put this before presentation also to your minds is, besides the point that it's a very good story, and I'd like to note that this is a partnership between DAF and mainly the National Department and wool growers, but it also emphasises the need for good biosecurity systems on farms. And I think the importance of ownership work here today is more of importance, and this is only to our upcoming sector that we focus now. But we must remember that the commercial side are also, or 10 times bigger than this. So this is the importance of, if a communal farmer have a loss of 10 sheep due to stray dogs or sickness issues that he couldn't get vaccines from, then almost 50% of his flock is destroyed. And that's why it's so important, the meeting today, as Dr. Nkuma said, we have to get to agreements as to how we take the way forward. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Wool Growers Association. We were supposed to get the presentation from Health, but it's an idea association. Not yet here. Can I check whether members will have any questions to the presentation that made by the Wool Growers Association? Honorable Teng, Honorable Ramkhwasi, Honorable Mandela, Honorable Matlakwan.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, I want to thank the Wool Growers Chair for contacting you. I think it's very important that we do meet with the role players in the industry, the people that they represent, so that we can find out what is the problems that they have on a daily basis. Chairperson, I think we need to look, it was mentioned lastly about the MOU. I was part of the previous committee, as you know, Chair, and there was discussions at that stage. I would also like to know, and I think it does, that needs to give us that information of what is happening. I think, if, as you can see, the increase in production is a massive, and it needs to support it. In fact, I think it needs to even be rolled out more, if that is the right word, because, Mr. Prinsler, if you can inform me, as far as I understand, that initiative is only happening in the Eastern Cape. There must also be other farmers, wool farmers in Mpumalanga and other provinces in the Free State. I know that we've met with farmers as a portfolio committee in the past in the Free State, and they were not even aware of such a program or what's going on. So, and I'm sure your organization is not only based in the Eastern Cape, it's a national organization, so that we can get some input maybe on what the impact would be if we roll it out on a national basis and not only in one province. That is the first thing. Then, Chairperson, the question I think must be asked either to the department or to OVP.
I think the Honourable Stan, yes, I wanted us to ask questions for clarity from the Wool Grower Association, and we're going to allow the department to present, and then we then discuss after that. I wanted the question just to get clarity so that you understand what is presented to us.
That's so another question of clarity to them, Chair. I was interested in that graph that you showed, and you mentioned the impact of Rift Valley fever. What is the story? I would like to know, because it's, at that stage I was told that there is no impact, and I would like to see what I don't. If you can just explain the graph for me. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Now, Chair, my questions currently will be based on policies now. As I was listening first from the Animal Health Forum, all these things they have mentioned are actually things for operations. They are not policy things, meaning that politically they are covered in these things. That you are saying, because you have structures that you have to work with expertise. Now, if you say you still believe that there's a lack of expertise, I don't understand, because you have got your OBPs and so on and so on, and we take it that those are structures for expertise. Now, I don't understand why can you get hold of that. If you can explain a bit about that. The same thing, you struggle to get where the vaccines are put, where they sit. Is it here or there or there? It can be challenged. Why is it like that? Because that cannot be a challenge when the structures are there, everything is there. Now, there's a very serious gap. There are serious gaps in operation. How so far this time can we allow such gaps to happen when policies are very clear? It also takes us to the issue. You have mentioned it very proper, communication. Why is it so difficult? How can it be so difficult when there is this thing? I don't think they are a very serious issue, but if you can tell us what are the real problems around these issues. Now, to the worship, I just want to find a very more explanation on the World Trust. What is that World Trust? What is it doing? How is it established and so on? And the effect of the training, in fact, do you see it as training the church? Because now, where I want to go is, when it comes to informal traders, that is where the problems are, because you say things are voluntary. Now, when you deal with voluntary things, it's very difficult to identify exactly who is the target, who must be organized, because somebody may come and tomorrow object not to come. So, how do you usually handle that to the optimal thing? Thank you, sir.
Chair, I'd rather wait for questions to be posed. We don't have questions of clarity.
You can respond, Honorable.
Thank you, sir. I think Ms. Ngona raised their questions that should be dealt with by OPP.
So I won't get into that. Maybe Chair, when we go to this, when we undertake the oversight program, we need to meet the small scale farmers so that we get from them what's the problems. Not to say without what to say, but in direction with them it's proper. But over and above that, I know very well that in provinces there is support from the department in terms of sharing that. Maybe elaborate a bit as to how to work with them so that we understand exactly what is the support that you get from the provinces in terms of that, and the support that you get from the Department of Agriculture. The last part here says Department of Rural Development, the coalition. It says unit partnership with rural development. I'm not sure in terms of what, whether in terms of, because they are responsible for the land, and the culture is responsible differently. The last one would be on one slide you talk of market. Where you are saying you assist in marketing. I can't remember. Who's responsible for this? Do you have a unit? But I know in other entities, let's say NAMA, for instance, they are very clear in terms of the marketing, and board is dealing with that. So elaborate a bit in terms of who is responsible for marketing. Thanks.
Yes, before you respond, the last question from me, which is your developmental program. In the last interaction with the portfolio committee, you had challenges with the labor. You were sourcing your labor from Lesotho, and there was an agreement with the previous committee that you are going to train South Africans. And I just want to check whether this 30% that you are talking about of job creation, is it South Africans, or are you still sourcing your labor from Lesotho? And if not, if you have, you can elaborate how you are going to sustain that. But if you have not, what are the challenges? Thanks. But, Honorable, you can start, Mr. Prince. I said Honorable.
I'm just a farmer. Thank you. Thank you for the questions. I think the questions will be answered by the three of us. I actually only want to focus on one or two issues. Perhaps I can elaborate on it. The Rift Valley fever issue. I think what we only can say there is that the farmers in mostly in the Karoo areas of Graaf-Reinet, Aberdeen, in the east part of the world, they suffered the most at that stage. And as you see on the graphs, the impact, what happened there. At the same time, and that was in the time of the previous minister, Mr. Imad Peterson, she actually takes a trip to China to try and convince the Chinese people that the Rift Valley fever is not a transferable disease and that they must try and re-establish our market there. We really understood the clarity that the vaccines we used at that stage were really effective. But that's now part of the issue. What we like to emphasize in this graft If such a problem occurs, that is the effect of what can happen. Whether we argue the whole day about the effectiveness of the vaccines and etc., the issue is, if such a thing happens, that is the impact. Now currently, to transfer it to the current situation of Luta, I'm a farmer, I'm in the production side of it. Now only to refresh your minds, why it's so important for us. You've got a Bluetown is a virus vaccine. You cannot vaccine youths that are already pregnant. Now currently in South Africa we've got two main mating seasons. The one in the Karoo is normally in October, and then these youths of 5 months start lambing now from 1st of March. Now vaccine wasn't available in October before so that the farmers can inoculate for this summer. Now also remember that the Bluetooth time is currently, and we are now in a drought. So luckily for us we are in a drought situation, and that we haven't got big outbreaks of Bluetooth. But it's normally our rainy season now in the livestock production areas. Now, to take myself as an example, I'm going to make my use lamb in September currently, and there's no store A, B, and C available. And it's actually too late if they were in February, because you have to inoculate 3 times, 6 weeks intervals. The second problem is the lambs that was born in October are now 4 or 5 months old. They are still not yet been inoculated. So if we get now good rains, and we pray for that, because our maize situation and the current farming situation is not good outside. So if we get started rain now, then we will have big problems, because these lambs will not be inoculated. So Chair, I'll take a long route to get to the answer. We only want to emphasize the impact if vaccines are not available and we cannot trust the vaccines. The second one was about the Wool Trust. Now the Wool Trust, as you know, in 1994, Minister Hanekom have dismantled all the boards, the control boards, and all the funds were put into a trust. And that is how the Wool Trust are there, with money that's perhaps getting from buildings and things like that. So there's a Wool Trust now that serves the wool industry. The National Wool Growers are one of the beneficiaries of the Wool Trust. So we get around about 9 million rand a year from the Wool Trust funds, so that we can do some extension work. And from that 9 million, almost 65% of our budget are going currently to the small cow farmer and communal farmers of the Eastern Cape. We've got also a good relationship with National, that they have got some secondary persons in these areas who help us with that, but Leon will elaborate on that. So in formal talks with the DG, I always say to her that that is totally the demand for money in these areas are far beyond 6-7 million rand per year. And what we ask actually the department is to assist us on a rand to rand base, that we don't get 12 or 15 million to do this work. And you see the results over there. And I must say that the DG listened carefully to me, and I think the talks will go on if there's money available. And I think she will make money available for us, because I think the results is one of the good stories of developing our communal farmers. And perhaps I must take now the opportunity to say that we've got a database of successful communal farmers currently who can be. And I'm a commercial farmer also for 30 years. That's not easy. But I know to be a successful communal farmer, you will be, for sure, a successful commercial farmer. And I think I'd like to take this gap now by saying that if we buy the land that's currently unavailable and we can identify beneficiaries, without interruption of anything, we can put a lot of successful communal farmers on land as of now to be commercial farmers in the years to come. I think about the sharing sheets, I'm going to give it to Mr. De Beer and Dr. Nkuma to answer the other questions. I hope I answer your questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Firstly, the question about the rollout to other provinces. We have a very small footprint in KwaZulu-Natal, the areas of Mfuthu and Umzungulu. We are in negotiation with the KwaZulu-Natal department to see if we can get extension offices under to us. But that needs to be supported by similar projects of infrastructure, genetic improvement, training and mentorship, etc. We have even a smaller footprint in the Eastern Free State, in the Rabanchu area. Many years ago we have constructed about 5 shearing sheds in those areas, but at this stage extremely low-key, and that is because of a lack of funds, lack of capacity. So we can roll it out of those areas. In the Northern Cape, a little bit of training and mentorship with farmers in and around Beaufort West, and in the Western Cape, through the programs run by the Western Cape Department of Agriculture, but also not on the same scale as we're doing in the Eastern Cape. The Woolhouse has been answered, the Rift Valley Fever. Just in terms of Rift Valley Fever, the disease result in used to abort the babies or these lambs, and that is where the big losses came from wool that should have been produced by the offspring of these ewes. The trade, the informal traders and so on, and the free market, well, what it is about is that it is a free market system. And the only way to convince a communal farmer who is involved in the informal market, and this market is wool through the informal market, is to train him and give him the knowledge and information that there is a formal market where he can increase his income drastically. Now the problem is that many of these farmers only have about 5 sheep, and you cannot fill a barrel with 5 sheep, you need at least 40 sheep. That is why we have the concept of communal shearing sheds where they are organized, farmers are organized around the infrastructure so that they collectively can class, shear and market their product on a bigger scale, because a wool bale weighs between 100 and 200 kilograms, and you need about 40 sheep to fill a bale, and obviously the wool needs to be classed as well. So our whole effort is to put infrastructure in place with the support from government to train and mentor those farmers so that they can participate and get access to the formal market. Who are those people who assist us? And those are the wool brokers. And the wool brokers, as I said, BKB and CMW are the main role players in this industry. These wool brokers assist the farmers to transport the wool to Port Elizabeth. In Port Elizabeth, there's a sample of the wool taken and it's tested for quality aspects at the wool testing bureau, and the quality aspects will determine the price eventually. So then every Wednesday in the season, wool is auctioned, and that is where the biggest competition is, because the farmers, the buyers of wool, will then buy wool on behalf of their clients in the international world, and that is where prices then are actually set at a much higher level. So we really try to, through our efforts, train farmers and convince them that there is another market, and we estimate that there's still about 1.8 million kilograms of wool marketed through the informal sector. So if you take this as a value and you also say that the price of wool can still increase by about, I would say, 40% for communal farmers, then we can more than double the income from wool in those areas still. So 158 million rand can become close to 350 million rand income only from wool, and there's also the mutton part. In terms of the Department of Rural Development and Agrarian Reform, that is the department in the Eastern Cape that was the agricultural department in the past. They are a very close partner of ours, or they were a very close partner of ours. Unfortunately, in the previous administration, we did not receive a lot of support from them, And that is where Minister Nkunti, who is the Minister of Rural Development and Land Reform, came to our rescue, because he was a former MEC in our province and he knew the genetic improvement program, he knew that about our role in development. And he came to the rescue of our genetic improvement program, and they're also now supporting us with infrastructure. But my plea really is that we would also like the National Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries to take our hand. It's fine that we get money for genetic improvement and get money funds for infrastructure development. But our training and mentorship is lacking far behind now, because we cannot do training and mentorship with genetic improvement funds and money that we see for infrastructure. So the money that we get from the Wool Trust, and that has been explained what the Wool Trust is, that money is helping us to put infrastructure in place where we have trained and experienced personnel. They are basically settled all over South Africa with offices in strategic areas. But the most people that we have employed is in the Eastern Cape, in the communal areas, with strong support from the Department of Rural Development and Agrarian Reform, where we currently have 5 of their extension officers seconded to our organization full-time. But we need money to let them travel and do the training and do the mentorship. We say that we know that there's about 846 communities producing wool in the Eastern Cape. And with our own personnel, we have about 10 extension officers with those seconded from the department. And they can manage maybe 30 sheds, each of them, which brings us only to about 300 sheds. So we drastically need to extend improve our capacity and more people, so that we can reach more of those people and obviously roll it out to other provinces as well. Then just the last point, in terms of the sharing, we had meetings with the Department of Home Affairs towards the end of last year, and later also with Mr. Zokwana in terms of the problems we have with the shearing. And it is still true that most of the shearers come from Lesotho, and we're trying to revivify it through our training and development of sheep shearers in South Africa. And we have a focus now with our 2 brokers. They are BKB and CMW, and they are the service providers of most of the shearing services in South Africa. And we are now going to focus only training shearers that are from South Africa, South African citizens. And we have also approached AgriCETA to assist us with funding to be able to do that. In the meantime, because we cannot train them and resolve all the problems in 1 year, we will need at least 5 years to roll this program out. But with the assistance of the Department of Home Affairs, we have now managed to classify sheep shearing as a scarce and critical skill. And this assists us to get visas for people from the Lesotho through the service providers from Home Affairs on the program that allows for access and critical skills. So I think that is a solution while we are busy training our farmers. We are having a meeting tomorrow with our 2 brokers to see how we are going to roll up the training, but we envisage at least 440 sheep shearers to be trained for this year, which is quite a big number, but we have more than 2,000 to replace eventually. Then you were asking about the jobs. Are they South Africans? Yes, for sure they are South Africans. They are communal farmers that are now marketing their wool through the formal auction system. They are the people receiving money from wool. And we are also working with Pretoria University to see how we can calculate the number of jobs that we create through our program. And basically what they are proposing is that we use minimum wage as a guideline and the increase in the income from wool and dividing the minimum wage to that income gives you at least the value that we are contributing to, which is towards job creation. But as I said, 2,000 additional checks were written to farmers who have not been involved in the formal auction before, and that those are new jobs, new households that are supported by wool. I think that's more or less the questions. Thank you. The MOU, I'm not exactly sure how we are with the MOU. We had an MOU signed in 2011 with the DG, Zita. And we are also busy working with DAF to see if we can renew that MOU, there is a draft, I believe it was with legal services at one stage. I'm not too sure how far that is, but this is really something that can provide us with a framework of partnership in the future. Thank you.
Just to answer the questions on OPP, I think you raised a very good point that it seems these issues are issues that can be resolved quite easily because they don't require any monumental policy changes. But the fact is that the vaccine is not in animals. So somewhere along the line there, something is not working. And I think that's what we need to get to, because I think those questions asked will be better answered by our colleagues at OBP, because they relate directly to the internal operations structure.
Thank you. Thank you, members and the our guests. Is it a follow-up question, Honourable Speer? Yes? Just a short one, Chair. I would be interested if Mr. Prince would know what the loss in rand value would have been during the 2010-11 days.
By putting me on the spot, Honourable Chair, you must be aware of it. But I think, you see, the problem is in 2010-11, we had a drop of about 4 million kilos. Let me start off by saying that we produced around about 46 million kilos of wool at that stage, of which about 8 to 12% coming from the communal and small-scale farmers of the Eastern Cape. And now with the Sotho wool, and we must note that all the Sotho wool is also marketed through the South African formal auction system. So now, and they will suffer the same problems in the Sotho, that area. So if we then try to calculate something, I would guess by saying that a loss of about 4 million kilos per year over 3 years, and that we can estimate the price around about 50 to 60 rand per kilo. So that's a huge amount of losses. We luckily now back to around about 50 million kilos, and the price are stable for the last 3 years, actually around about 115 rand per kilo for clean wool. And I think it's a substantial loss. And the effect of that, and I think we can, there's a feather for the commercial farmers that there were no jobs being cancelled, or what you could call it, people didn't lay off any laborers at that stage, and that we are actually back now to normal production with the worldwide. And I must note that the work that Dr. Marisani is doing here in Patamaja with the foot and mouth egg issues as well. So I think that part of our animal health situation are all right. We are happy with that. It's only if we now can address the specific problems of OEP that will help us to way forward. I hope I answer your question. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I suspected that the three gentlemen that just joined us are from Raisin. You're welcome. You can introduce yourself and the leaders who will then go into presentation.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Good morning, members. I'm Larry Weinstein, the CEO of the Raisin Association.
Good morning, I'm Vumi Akamo, the Liaison Officer.
Good morning, I'm Dr. Benny Panamara. I'm a council member of the Thoroughbred Breeders Association of South Africa, and I also represent South Africa at the International Thoroughbred Breeders Federation, which is a world body that governs breeding of racehorses.
Okay, we have members of the portfolio committees. From the end, we have Honorable Ude Mari, we have Honorable
Mwabe, we have Honorable Mandela, we have Honorable Yongblut, we have Honorable Spain, we have Honorable Rampas, and Honorable Makagwan. I'm the chairperson, Rosina Semenya. So you're welcome. We have invited you to come and share with us your programs and challenges that you face in your industry and what are issues that you think the portfolio committee can help you to resolve. So you're welcome to the meeting and the leader can present.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I would like to say thank you to all the Honourable Members here. We've been obviously dealing with issues within the horse racing fraternity, and I sit here as a member of the industry. Even though I head up the Racing Association, I'd like you to give an overview of the Racing Association so people can understand. And then what I will do is I will pass on to Dr. Fanamava, who's been dealing with the equine protocols with DEF, and he can take us through some of the issues, if that's okay. Thank you very much. The Racing Association was formed in 2007 on the insistence of, 2005, on the insistence of the Gauteng government when the company Pumalela was formed. The Racing Association was to comprise of Gosford Park Racing Club, Vol Racing Owners and Trainers Association, Turrentine Racing Club, and Newmarket. All of these clubs initially handed over property and assets to Pumalela for consideration of 35% shareholding in the company. That company was formed called Pumalela. Later, Eastern Province joined, as well as Northern Cape and Bloemfontein Turf Club. At a later date, Gosford Park Racecourse was sold to raise capital to inject into Pumalela, as was Newmarket, and Bloemfontein was closed down to cut costs of the running of the business. One of the conditions that was in place was that a trust be formed by the Racing Association, which would comprise of 5 trustees appointed by the RA and another trustees appointed by SASCOC. This trust would house a 35% shareholding of Pumalela, and the trust would be the custodian of their shareholding, as well as be responsible for transformation programs within racing areas. The Racing Association is a non-profit organization which is governed by an elected board, by its members which are colour holders in sport of horse racing. The chairman is William Taylor, directors Peter Naidu, Michael Leaf, Vidrick Silling, Rob Scott, Cliff Miller, and Ron Paddock. Racing Association has 10 staff members running an office at Turrentine Racecourse, of which I am the CEO. The Racing Association was formed to protect the ethos of racing and to ensure the longevity of the sport of horse racing, and to ensure Pumalela respected and continued to enhance the sport of horse racing. From a stakes perspective, the RA controls the stakes agreement, which is a formula that is derived from the tote and sports betting turnover. The RA has representation on the following boards in the industry: the NHA, which is the National Horse Racing Authority, the South African Apprentice Academy, the Groom's Riding Program, Kenilworth Racing, SATRAC, which is part of it, which is a company that has an affiliation with the DTI, Racing South Africa, Pumalela, on the Pumalela board, the Greater Stakes Committee, the Programming Committee, and we host the Industry Liaison Committee. The RA are contributors to the Flame, the Household Horse Care Unit, the National Horse Trust, the Eastern Cape Horse Care Unit, the Equine Research Centre, Western Province Groom School, Western Province Horse Care Unit. The RA promotes racing and ensures that owners' interests are taken care of. The reason I've given you the overview is obviously what I represent, but as I sit here today, I represent the industry as a whole because it's an industry issue where we are trying to sort out the protocols between exporting horses and importing horses in South Africa. What has happened in the interim, we had a meeting with the chairperson and discussed this, but there are certain steps that have been taken and certain measurements and issues have arisen and been dealt with, And I obviously would like to hand over to Dr. Fundamenta, who could give you an update and tell you what our issues are and what has happened. Thank you.
Honourable Chair, thank you very much. I'm not on values here, but I am going to highlight, I've been here before, but that was for the Damning Review Commission, where we basically as an industry had to tell the Honourable Ministers why we should be allowed to continue. I'm now addressing agriculture because the problem that we have has a very high impact on an agricultural product, and that product is a thoroughbred racehorse that myself and colleagues like me breed. The bottom line on this whole situation is that our product, the South African racehorse, is as good as anybody's product anywhere in the world. Our biggest problem is, and we've proven that again and again through the exploits of our champion trainer, Mr. Mike de Kock, who's gone to the Olympics of horse racing, the World Cup, and has beaten all the best horses in the world on numerous occasions. Our problem is that our product is as good as anybody's, but right now, because of our restrictive trade export protocols, we have to accept 25% of the going rate for an average thoroughbred racehorse is what a South African breeder needs to be happy with. So we are losing out on a multi-billion dollar industry worldwide as a result of policies that restrict our exports. The non-cash trade barrier that is used by our so-called trading partners for restricting our exports is called African horse sickness. African horse sickness is indeed a devastating disease, but through the exports and the hard work put in by veterinarians at DAF and also in the private sector, we believe, and we are currently undergoing a risk assessment by an international firm, that we believe that the fears of our trading partners are very much not founded. So there have been lots of developments since I was last in these chambers, in that as a collaboration with DAF and the Western Cape State Veterinarians for a practical reason, which is that we propose to export from Cape Town. The body has been formed that is called HIT, Horse Import Export Task Team. And I particularly like the last two words, task team, which means that we are a bunch of people that are going to make things happen. I serve on there as a member of industry, along with veterinarians from DAF, as explained before. We are in a situation where we became aware of central government's ambitions to host the Olympic Games in 2024. And we felt that it was imperative to come and address the honourable members to make it very, very clear that the hosting of the Olympic Games will never, ever be considered unless there is equestrian sport. And we wanted to make sure that everybody was aware of this fact. So without equestrian, we do not have Olympic Games. And while we basically don't have export protocols, where competitors could safely come into a country, compete, and take their horses back home, we cannot host the Olympics. And we do not know through which avenue we needed to make this clear to various departments within government, so that this could be addressed in an appropriate way. My understanding is that we have to have a very clear way forward by the time we basically pitch for the 2024 Olympics, and my understanding is that that date is early January of 2017, which realistically means that we have a very big and a very urgent problem. So I've given you quite a lot of bad news. I think I want to give you some good news. The good news is that through the efforts of HIT, we had an export-import workshop last year in April in Gauteng. It was well attended, and we had international veterinarians basically coming to tell us what they thought would be palatable for an importing country. And the upshot of that workshop was that it was felt that if there was a lockdown facility in Cape Town, bearing in mind that African horse sickness is a disease transmitted by midges, just as blue tongue, which is a great example, a lockdown facility where these midges could not enter and potentially affect the horse with African horse sickness, and we carried on with mover controls and surveillance as we have done for the last 15 years, given that we have a very, very good diagnostic test for African horse sickness, if all that was in place, they could persuade their government to then accept horses from South Africa. We have made great strides along proving that, and we are now, as we speak, having an independent risk assessment from a body called Ausbet, which is a highly reputable company from Australia that have consulted to various governments on various problems that they might have. We spent the whole of Thursday and Friday last week in a meeting where, without, and it's a bit premature for me to predict the outcome, but it looks like the outcome is going to be that the risk is in fact minimal, that we would export African sickness from this country. As a parallel session, we are aware that there is a movement in KZN where the KZN government are also very interested in building a facility, and that facility is busy undergoing the exact same risk assessment by the same company, so it's a generic process, and the body will then advise that. In closing, we have a problem. We can't export. We can't hurt the Olympics. We have solutions, and if we were to create a multidisciplinary task team where the principal people involved would have to be the Department of Sport, the DTI, the Treasury, Science and Technology, along with the veterinarians from DAF and the private sector, if we as a matter of extreme urgency can form a body that looks into it, we could solve these problems in time for 2017 for our proposal for the Olympics. And I have to stress that this is the export situation. The other situation that is more relevant to the domestic of Africa is that the disease of African horse sickness causes massive devastation to the peoples of South Africa. Of the 300,000 odd horses in this country, the bulk of them reside in the Eastern Cape. So the people who suffer the biggest losses financially would be people whose horse is their only means of transport. And the only way to protect them would be the development of a very effective vaccine. That vaccine is in an advanced stage of development, but there's a funding shortage, which is yet again where everybody needs to pull together to solve the problem. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Thank you very much. Can we engage with the presentation through question clarity seeking? Honourable Spain, Honourable Ramukhasi, Honourable Matakwani. Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, again, I need to thank the people that can make a representation. Chair, it's important that we know what's going on. Chairperson, I would like to ask two or three questions. The first one was the word diagnostic test for IFAs. Do we have something currently? One of my concerns, and maybe that's this also later for when we get to the department, is that we cannot distinguish between animals that have been vaccinated and animals that was contracted the disease. And all that exists. Also later on question maybe for foot and mouth disease, because that was in the past one of the reasons why they said we cannot vaccinate animals, because then we cannot distinguish between the disease and the vaccine or the vaccinated animal. So what would be the I would almost say the main use of this diagnostic tool be? And then secondly, you said that the risk would be minimum if to export the disease to other countries. If the risk is minimum, why do we currently have a ban on export? And is it linked to this diagnostic test? And I'm trying to find out what the reason is.
Then, on the horses that have died over the past how many years of African horse sickness, were there any records kept? And who would, I'm sure it wouldn't be with you guys, because most of the animals is not in the racehorse sector, but it's normal people, as you said, that use the horses on a daily basis. But were there any records kept of horses that died that were vaccinated? As far as I'm aware, animals that participate in sport and events and equestrian things must be vaccinated, and it must only be OBV vaccine. You cannot use another vaccine. So were there any records kept? And because there was a really interesting word that I picked up that you mentioned, the word is effective vaccines, and I think the effectiveness to come up in the past. So if you could just help me with that, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Only one clarity, Chair. Just to find out exactly that from the presentation, it means the problem that you are facing are precisely the policy problems. Are these the problems because of our laws in the country, of the policies, and afterwards, what do you think can actually be a proposal to deal with the law? Because you say there are very good tools that you are using to actually manage. What do you think can be direction to be taken in making the law to allow? Thank you.
Thank you. When it comes to foot and mouth disease in the country, there are steps taken by the department. I remember the red line in KZN. And I'm not sure the horse reason, the horse sickness, as to what steps we have taken in terms of circumventing that. What I didn't know was that if a particular area, like if KZN is affected with foot mouth disease, so the country is affected, you cannot pass the test. So if you can maybe clarify us as to what you're doing in terms of that. The last one, even when we're discussing full grow up, Eastern Cape features in North Brazil from there. I know it's done in Port Elizabeth, Mr. Prince. But again, here there is Cotsford, there is the Kennel West, there is Greyfield, there are all these things. What may be the problem are the horses in the Eastern Cape, as horses do in Gauteng and Asia, are they not in a capacity to compete in those race horses like we do? In other areas. I come from bigger eggplants of Islam, and I know very well there was a horse racing in a small town next to my village in Beni. And unfortunately I never attended. I don't know what was happening there. So maybe that's the beginning of what Eastern Cape can do in terms of that. But the question is that problem not having capacity to come to participate?
Thank you, Honorable Members. You can respond to you and your team.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'm very glad I went to bed early last night so I could answer all these questions. In response to the Honourable Member Stain's question about the diagnostic chair, She's smiling at me because I've been here before and I've been on the hot seat before, but luckily there's been quite a bit of scientific development since then. In that, this diagnostic test is called a real-time PCR. And a PCR is basically a DNA-based molecular test that gives you a very rapid result. And certainly 2 years or 2.5 years ago, when I was last year, there were still lots of problems with it. I did need to get a couple of terms out there and give the definitions for them so that everybody is comfortable with the things I'm speaking about. The first definition I want to clarify is the OIE, which is basically the animal equivalent of the World Health Organization. I'm sure you're aware of its existence. And then the other is the EU. And to date, the EU, the European Union, has been a very convenient go-to body for countries all over the world because the EU has the resources to go and pick whether a country can validate the claims that it has in terms of animal diseases. So it's been very convenient for countries to hide behind protocols as made by the EU. Because the EU is in existence, they've got the money, and they can do it. But we all are familiar with the EU. It's a lot of countries. They only meet every now and again. And to change the laws, the EU can take forever. And as a country, we cannot wait for them to finally go through their slow, blinding processes. This diagnostic test that we have now, the real-time PCR, needs to be absorbed into either the EU or the OIU's manual that prescribes trade. There are various such tests, and they have to go through 4 stages of validation so that they can be accepted as diagnostic tests that would give confidence to trading people across the world. The South African real-time PCR is the only one that is in its 4th phase of validation, which means that it is being tested as we speak in laboratories all over the world in terms of how robust it is. Whereas somebody in Singapore or Australia or in America can use our test and get the same results. So in answer to your question, ma'am, it is the only one that's good enough in terms of, even though it may not be what they have DIVA capabilities, which is what your question was, does it have DIVA capabilities? Does it separate vaccinated animals from ones that harbor subclinical infections? It is the only one that is the only that can test positively. It's the only one that can test consistently negatively, and that has a cutoff value that is accurate enough so that one can certify with absolute certainty. Sorry for the big background on that, but I think it was important for everybody to understand. The second question is a little bit offside because I said I am preempting the finding as to why it would be found that the risk will be minimal. At our last heat meeting, I asked for the job to create the animated cartoon that explains the risk of exporting African horse sickness, and I'm going to do that. While the Western Cape has been separated from the country, which is part of the answer to the honourable member over there, is that traditionally the rest of the country has been getting outbreaks of African horse sickness every year during the late summer when there is a high activity of these midges that transmit African horse sickness. Historically and traditionally, the Western Cape, because we get separated from the rest of the country by the Great Karoo, have not been affected with this disease to the same level. It is postulated that the disease starts in Zebra in the Kruger Park and those areas and then migrates down the country with the midges that infect the horses. So through the efforts of the area government and the Disease Control Act, basically in the last 16 years there's only been the odd case of African horse sickness in various places in the Western Cape. So during our risk assessment process that is busy happening right now, the realistic situation is this. If you can imagine a situation where there are 32 horses in a quarantine facility in Kenilworth Racetrack in Cape Town with a vector-proof facility around it, positive air pressure so the meats cannot fly in, mesh, a proper situation where the horses get loaded into a mid effective proof container, taken onto an airplane field, and they fly to their destination. The reality is, and we've proven this by sampling, surveying all the horses around Cape Town and the outlying areas as far as Piketnas and Burger and the Hottentot Holland Mountains. With this PCR test that we have that gives you a result in 4 hours, the reality is a horse will go into a quarantine after spending 40 days in the Western Cape where African sickness does not exist, and we can prove it. They then go into a lockdown facility for 14 days where every horse outside is not infected with African horse sickness. In fact, the closest one is somewhere between 70 kilometers if there were to be an outbreak in the Western Cape, but realistically 700 kilometers away in Port Elizabeth or Edo or somewhere else. These horses then get tested for African horse sickness within 24 hours of getting shipped to their final destination. So for a horse to then infect a horse in another country, some super midge would have to wake up 700 kilometers or 70 kilometers away, fly like the blazes throughout the evening, and after the last PCR test, bust through that facility, by that horse, and cause it to have African horse sickness. That's going to affect a horse in another country. I think the Honourable Sam will agree with me that that is a very minimal risk. The third question was about African horse sickness deaths. African horse sickness deaths do occur on an annual basis. It is a duty, a very big point needs to be made there, and I'm sure it was made earlier on, that African horse sickness is a notifiable disease. So the only authority that can make statements about African horse sickness would be DAF. And it is the job of various veterinarians and various provinces to report these deaths throughout the country and society, and which they have done. And yes, there has been a lot of criticism for some of it I would imagine would be founded, and some of it, a lot of it would be unfounded, because it is definitely an area where we can, and I will get to it later when I answer the Honourable Member's question just now about the legislation, etc. It is definitely an area where we as a country can lift our game. Okay, the next question was about the laws of the country and the policing. The question was asked whether there was an issue with the policing. It being a notifiable disease, there is legislation in place that regulates the movement of horses into the Western Cape province because of our efforts through the old EU legislation and the old OIE legislation to keep the disease out of the Western Cape, so that there was potential for exports from this minimally risky area. The legislation is in place. We do get challenged, and I think it's a very important point for this body to understand, is that we do get challenged internationally because it is said to us by our trade partners that our wonderful constitution in the country that we are all very proud of is so democratic that there is a situation where that symbol, which is the responsible authority, could issue a decree as to how a disease should be controlled, and it is very potential for the provinces to overrule that. So that if somebody doesn't get the result they want from that, they would just go knock on the door of one of the provincial authorities and maybe get a different result. There is criticism of that, and that is not my level of expertise. I am a veterinarian. But it is something that we certainly cannot ignore. But as for the movement controls into the Western Cape, they are in place, and no further acts need to be passed as far as I'm aware. Okay, it basically tied into the question of the foot and mouth, the red line versus what is being done in terms of the disease in the Western Cape. And I keep hammering on the Western Cape not for any other reason than its traditional lack of annual African horse sickness. Thanks to the good Karoo, more than anything else. Yes, there's been legislation. It has been at a relatively high level. Do I think that enough has been done to restrict illegal movement, etc.? Well, I think we all can lift our game in terms of that. But the reality of the disease, it is not a disease like flu, the way we could sit in the chamber and submit disease to each other. Because of the situation that I need to be bitten by a midge, me as a carrier of African horse sickness, and then the midge needs to fly from here and then infect another animal over there, would be the reality that makes it different from some of the other diseases. So a lot has been done. Yes, I think in terms of awareness from the rest of the country, more can be done. And the second question was again about the Eastern Cape. And we've stressed Eastern Cape for various reasons. The first one, to answer your question, yes, the nearest racetrack to East London would be at Fairview in Port Elizabeth. And the second part of your question, which is a very good question, is that we are all, is about just total numbers of horses in the Eastern Cape. And given that we are all friends here, it is important to make sure that we understand that the problem is not just for people with ambitions of the Olympic Games or maybe some white elitist desire to go and compete in the World Cup or stuff like that. It is a very real problem that where probably indigenous communities or people that previously disadvantaged people in reality suffer the most, because an equine to one of those people is an extremely important part of their livelihood in terms of transport, plowing, you name it. And because the largest numbers are there and the vaccine is not freely available there, the suffering there is by far the greatest. So it is a problem that is equal to all South Africans. It's very important to people who are exporting and have the Olympic Games in South Africa because of the knock-on effect, but it is also very, very important from a day-to-day life point of view for a very large number of South Africans.
Honorable Chair, if I could just add to that, I think it's important to know you asked the question about competing in other areas. Elizabeth is very important to the racing industry, but not only that, we've also been looking at opportunity for a racetrack in Berlin. There's a company called Masabani Turf Club that approached government and has already been helping them to set up a racetrack there for the horses that race in Berlin. But also important is, which Dr. Fanova mentioned, we have gone on to programs where we have given not just race horses, all horses in rural areas that we can afford to do. We've gone and given them the African horse sickness vaccine, and we've started to set up records to enable us to know where these horses are and which horses have been vaccinated. So there's a lot being done, but obviously this all takes funding, and as the racehorse industry, we do it not just for racehorses, but everybody benefits by it. And unfortunately, the funding is not there to take it to the level that needs to. And I think the most important part, that's why we're talking to all of you and hoping that you'd endeavor to help us, is that we've been talking to the governments for the last 15 years as an industry to ease the protocols. But we'll never get it right unless our government gets involved with their government as a government endeavor. So that's really what we're trying to put forward and people to have a look at. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
And that stresses again that we basically come for help, because as industry and as scientists, we've taken it about as far as it can get. And without high-level intervention from government and many departments in government, not only agriculture but also sport and DTI, is the only way that we can basically address this problem and solve it for all South Africans.
Thank you very much. We are now going to allow the department led by the DG to present the status so far on their management process of diseases and the regulations and all the outstanding issues, DG. You know them. Yes.
And this one?
Yes.
Thank you very much. If I can start by introducing the colleagues who joined after the set of introduction, chairperson. On the far left is Dr. Julian Yatsa, who is the acting DDG for Agricultural Production, Health and Food Safety, but he's also the chief director responsible for plant production. Next to him is Dr. Songwabo, who is responsible, I've had a little paper here with everything on, but I think that veterinary is a public health. And next to him is Dr. Modisani, Mike Modisani, who I think honorable members know. He's chief state veterinarian, and he's flanked by Dr. Maja, who is a state veterinarian. And I can just pause there and say that team must be applauded for some good news. Our minister took the lead in introducing an operation compliance. We had an inspection by the OIE in the November, beginning of December, and they found they were impressed by certain things that we achieved since they last audit in the end of 2013, and there were some improvements which needed to be made. Our minister, supported by the deputy minister and MEPs, launched a an awareness campaign, because we could not, as a department, by ourselves make the address the challenges in the red line area that the honourable member referred to. And just yesterday, we heard that the OIE has reconfirmed South Africa's foot and mouth disease free status. And I think that that is something tremendous, something that we can all be proud of.
Yes.
So I think that that's a good place to start, chairperson. We are also joined by Dr. Mr. Zama Khalisi. He's a senior manager from NAMT, who can answer certain questions. Chair, we've prepared a presentation. I think the committee asked us in particular to provide an update on the OIE audits and what has been done and where we are, so there's a presentation to that effect. But I do want to attempt to link the OVE also have prepared a presentation. They switched their presentation in a particular way, but as we were sitting here, we've encouraged them to use the time allocated to focus on the things that matter, are pertinent to this question, the questions raised here, and also the question that they might have to pause around some of the slides and leave some of the others alone. I want to say, I think Mr. Prince mentioned that we have been meeting. We met as recently as the 20th of January. And the issues, let me start with a different place, chairperson. Honorable members will know that the theme for this administration and for this year in particular is growing the economy. And as such, agriculture has been identified as the sector that will facilitate that, bring about that economic growth and the job creation in the shortest possible time. There are other sectors, but agriculture, we can see the results earlier. And therefore, when we met, for example, with the National Wool Growers Association, we really applauded the statistics and the information that was shared here this morning about the size of the industry, around quality of wool, that is the sought after commodity, the actual jobs in the sector, the work that they have done with making the industry, the sector more inclusive. And so I think we're committed to that partnership. But in that context, I want to say that we met on the 20th of January. I'm a little bit confused around why we issued that we talked of this so recent, that we bring it here when we know that it isn't, there hasn't been adequate time to resolve those issues. And like one of the honourable members said, some of the issues that Rowie raised are in fact operational matters. The OBT will speak to the issue of vaccines, and I think the CEO of OBT accounted to the portfolio committee towards the end of last year around the supply of vaccines, and we've acknowledged that there has been a challenge, and I think what I'm going to ask my colleagues from OBT in particular, I understand in the main the issues to be there's a transitioning from old to new equipment. We have in that transitioning process, some momentum has been lost. I understand too that we're dealing with aging infrastructure. I understand too that there were issues with a few labor issues there. But I also think my sense is I have engaged with the CEO very, very frankly. The minister has engaged with the CEO and with some of the board members. The minister has visited the facility. And therefore we have a fair degree of confidence that the entity is on the way to resolve those issues. One of the questions that this committee has raised and has challenged us with was that we have to get more money from Treasury to address the infrastructure problems and the challenges at OBT. Now, as you will know, OBT is a company and it does not get any transfer from the fiscus as stands. It is self-sufficient. But we have been working with the CEO because as God, we've engaged Treasury. Treasury quite understands, if we call growing the economy, there's a need to be able to say, we have to invest so much in this project. And in doing so, in over such a time, we will be producing X amount of money, then break even, and that investment would be worthwhile. The CEO has prepared that submission, and this is a submission which we have not yet taken to Treasury, because I think that opportunity came up for us in last year, and we will do so. The other opportunity that is available to support the expansion of OBB is that one of the priorities that the President spoke about in his own as well is the issue of industrialization, large-scale industrialization. And DTI has the grants available and is encouraging that industrialization. So DTI has also taken an interest in OBT. And what investments do they have to make in order to support the expansion of the capacity of the entity to produce and to be self-sufficient and to begin to export. The colleagues from the west side on the left know more about it. But I have sat with Dr. Cornelius for a long time, and he's explained to me, as a response to one of the issues that the colleagues from National Wool Growers raised. I think we acknowledge that towards the end of last year, that this blue tongue vaccine comes as Wuslohari A, B, and C, or 1, 2, and 3, A, B, and C. And the OBP released 7,000 doses of C. And this vaccine is registered as a vaccine of three parts, and therefore it caused some distress that we only released one part of it. And by the end of January, the entity released equal amounts of A and B. They released a million doses, and I mean 7,000 were taken up. They then released the equivalent of that. And they also released, and I think the colleagues in the industry know, that vaccines, the suppliers, the points from which supplies, can be sourced, place orders, and OBP responds to that. And that you know that the vaccine, as far as I understand it, you can't also oversupply, and you've got to supply in terms of the demand, because if you oversupply, it is something that loses shelf life, and then that is a lot of investment. So I think it is those complexities, and when we present the data about the availability, we need to put both parts of it. But I'm personally going to ask the Dr. Morsani to respond, to just leave the discussion. I think that he can state it on technically. I think you've heard most of it, Dr. Morsani. Maybe you can begin and just speak to the issues that the National Wool Growers Association will have an interest. And I can't remember whether you were in the meeting that we had with Harry and them, but you would know what the issues are. And then I think I will ask OBP to present. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And thanks, Chairperson and honorable members. You rightly indicated, G, that I wasn't at the meeting with the wool growers. And, of course, the feedback that we obtained from colleagues is, as indicated by the wool growers, the memorandum of understanding per se is still being worked on. It has already gone to legal services, and it was still being discussed with the provinces. But related to the issues that were raised by the wool growers on drip rally fever, for instance, the issue of the efficacy of the vaccine that was used. We must remember that in the past we had three types of rivalry vaccine. We had the Dong-13, then we also had the live vaccine. The problem that we know has always been the case, particularly with the use of vaccines, the live vaccine, has always been that the timing of the use of the vaccine has not been prompt. If the vaccine is used during an outbreak, there is a tendency that we might end up actually spreading the disease, because normally when the vaccine is used, you don't make use of one needle per sheep. We tend to use one needle for a number of sheep, especially if we mass vaccinations. So the vaccine being a live virus, we end up spreading the virus itself that is causing the problem. So it is often prudent to start vaccinating the animals much earlier than the risky season to avoid that happening. The efficacy really has never been an issue to the best of my understanding. There was protective immunity that was being brought about by the use of vaccine. It is just an issue that I heard today. But of course, availability has been a problem. And in the context, maybe OP will respond to that. Is the one that maybe I believe that the OP will have withdrawn the vaccine if the efficacy wasn't very good from that point of view. But there has always been ongoing developments that have been taking place from the point of view of the other vaccines. It is true that during the outbreaks of the Rift Valley fever disease a few years ago, there were a lot of trade restrictions that actually took place, particularly from China's point of view. But the department had always been very involved in negotiations, to the extent that We even engaged the World Organization for Animal Health to try and broker with the Chinese government for the importation of wool, considering that we're not really regarding wool as a risk commodity if it was to be exported. But although we were not in a position to resolve the impasse then, but there had always been discussions that had been going on with our office in China. And although very late, the discussions ended up bearing some fruit. I'm not sure if next time, if there is an outbreak of Rift Valley fever, whether they will continue with their restrictions. But it has always been, it will always try from the point of the department to try and broker if there are those challenges. Further than that, to the best of my knowledge, we are in regular meetings with wool growers, and then if there are issues of concern, we always try to attend to them together, DG. I'm not sure whether, DG, you want me to also touch on the issues of the horses, or I could only speak to the issues of... On the issue of the horses, we had a meeting with the Deputy Minister, and maybe the horse industry must explain some of these issues, because from the department point of view, we are getting a number of views. As rightfully presented by Dr. Panamerwe, there is a group, I want to call it a group, but I might be mistaken, that is presenting a point of view of KwaZulu-Natal, and there is a group that is presenting a point of view of the Western Cape. And I am of the opinion that this is really breaking the whole momentum, because our understanding from the point of view of the Western Cape, the metropolitan area of Cape Town, being one of the areas that in which we have never actually experienced outbreaks of African horse sickness, we have always been using that point of view for as a negotiating point for purposes of export of horses to all over the world, including the US, Mauritius, and then also, if possible, the EU. But the EU had always had concerns about the outbreaks that have been happening in the protection area, the area that is protecting the free zone of the Western Cape. And it has resulted in us negotiating from a point of view of a vector-free quarantine facility from which we can export the horses to Mauritius and if possible to Dubai and then also to other areas. But the group that is now negotiating for an establishment of a lockdown facility in the KwaZulu-Natal is also looking from a point of view of Olympics taking place in KwaZulu-Natal. And under normal circumstances, we understand Durban in particular to be a very high-risk area from which other countries may not be interested to export their horses from. And if we negotiate from a point of view of the Western Cape, our opinion is we stand a better chance from a point of view of the vector that is in the Western Cape has not been proven to be having the disease or to be transmitting the disease itself. So it makes it very difficult for us to negotiate with the United Arab Emirates, for instance, to export from Durban, whereas we are also negotiating with Mauritius to export from the Western Cape. So through you, Chairperson and VG and honorable members, I would like you to request our industry to come with one position so that we know exactly from which point we should negotiate, because it's making things really very difficult. Of course, there is justification from a point of view that if we have a lockdown facility, we don't have measures going into the facility, and as Dr. Panamera said, we make use of the PCR test. If it succeeds in the end, we might be in a position to prove that we are free from the disease. But we cannot run away from the fact that African horse sickness is a reality. It is happening in South Africa, and the other countries are concerned about it. I'm not sure if we would be in a position to export it if we really apply all the mitigating steps that we need to do, like applying insecticides, like putting the horses in a lockdown facility. I'm becoming very technical, and I think I'm becoming very unfair to the members. But it's something that we need to sort out, because as actually indicated, we have that workshop, and there were other places that were being proposed that might be risk-free or of lower risk, and we are struggling too much, so we are not in a position to have a similar approach. We are very concerned about the lack of vaccine from African horse sickness point of view, and we know that it will affect some areas like the Eastern Cape quite adversely, and we at this moment we are actually also trying to come up with some dispensations so that we are in a position to allow horse racing to take place in the country, so that we are not stifling that aspect. Because I think what the horse racing industry didn't say is the amount of employment that is actually coming from the horse racing industry per se. The group that presented to the Deputy Minister indicated that they used to appoint around 100,000 people, and the numbers have gone down drastically, and that's an issue that the Minister was very concerned about. So I think I will end the DG to avoid getting too technical on some of the aspects. I hope I haven't missed some issues.
Thank you, DG, and good morning to the honourable members. We will ask Dr. Marja to do the presentation on the OIE results from the OIE mission, and then after that I have only two slides to speak to the regulations on the compulsory community services. Thank you.
Good morning, honourable chairperson and honourable members, DG, colleagues from industry. As VD has already indicated, we had our little celebration yesterday. That's not the reason we are late. We didn't get flights yesterday. Apologies, Jefferson. If you see us nodding, it's because we had too much celebrating, and I think we deserve it. I couldn't help it. The outline of the presentation basically covers the 2013 OIE mission, followed by the 2014 mission, and what the department and the three respective provinces are doing so far and what we have achieved. You'll recall that in 2013 in November, the OIE visited the region. This mission wasn't just dedicated to RSA, it was mainly to evaluate the SMD situation in the four countries that have zones that are free of foot and mouth disease, and that was Botswana, Namibia, Swaziland, and ourselves. The mission started on the 3rd of November in South Africa and ended on the 8th, and in the middle of that mission, they visited Swaziland. The aim of the mission was basically to assess the implementation and our compliance with the relevant provisions that are laid down in the territorial code for control of foot and mouth disease from infected zones and to prevent the introduction into the free zone. They were also here to ensure that the FMD free status is properly maintained and remains intact, and in the case of South Africa, they also wanted to check that our control measures and the situation following the 2011 KZN outbreak has efficiently been brought under control and the issues were addressed. There was a number of findings ranging from the identification of animals in the protection zone. Though we grant animals after we vaccinate them with an F mark on the neck, they indicated that that was not an individual animal identification and therefore we don't have full control and knowledge of animals in the protection zone and therefore advise that we identify animals individually. They were also not happy with the visibility of veterinary services and the veterinary controls in the protection zone. They were not happy with internal control measures that we were applying in the protection zones. They indicated that they're not sufficient, but whatever it is that we are doing, we need to improve on it, and that has been done. The introduction of animals from the protection zone into the free zone did not comply with the guidelines stipulated in the Territorial Code. You'll recall, Chairperson, that in the previous presentation, we indicated that the OIE had clarified to us during the 2011 mission that anything outside of the free zone they regard as infected. Though we still regard ourselves as having three different zones, the free zone, the protection zone, and the infection zone where there's active infection between endemic buffaloes. And the OIE does regard ourselves as having, or countries as only having two zones, the free and infected, and therefore the protection zone is regarded as infected. And therefore controls from the protection zone into the free zone must be managed as stipulated in the Territorial Code. The two game reserves in the north of KZN were deemed to be infected following the 2011 KZN outbreak and indicated that these two should be managed similar to how we manage the Kruger National Park. They were also not very comfortable with the protection zone around the Kruger National Park and the maintenance of international fences. We went and inspected quite a number of fences, including the fence that the previous portfolio committee visited in the north of KZN, bordering Mozambique, and that fence was found to be intact, but they were not happy with the general management of the fence because there are different shareholders managing the fence between ourselves, Public Works, and the defense. Progress that has been made so far. We subsequently submitted an addendum in January of 2014 to the OIE following this mission, and it resulted in RSA gaining the risk status in February of 2014. We've procured 600,000 ear tags, which are currently being used in the protection zone. There are two different color-coded tags, all of them bearing a red A mark to indicate that they are government-issued ear tags. And those that are in the protection zone, they have an F indicating that it's a foot and mouth disease infected zone. We have green ear tags where we vaccinate the animals. We have pink ear tags where the animals are not vaccinated, and the yellow ear tags in the north of KZN, where we only do monitoring and movement control. We've also procured software system that would enable us to capture all these individual tags, including the owners or ownership of the animals, and it will also assist us with movement control and making that the animals are infected as frequently as they should be. We've also amended the veterinary procedural notice to comply with the OIE code and particularly the terminology. Members still use terminology like the red line, like the buffer zone, and those that is the terminology that the OIE no longer uses. We now use the protection zone, and that is it. But we still understand when we talk about the buffer zone and the red line exactly what we're talking about. We have also re-erected the red line fence of KZN. It is now yellow in color, but I guess we still will call it the red line fence. We have continued to maintain the international fences and in consultation with the Defense Force and public works to try and streamline and strengthen our efforts in borderline management. We hosted OIE at the end of 2014, as DG has already indicated, and this 2014 mission was specifically dedicated to South Africa. And that was based on the findings of 2013. They had indicated that they will revisit to come and ensure that what they had recommended and what we had said we were doing is actually being done. So the purpose was to assess the compliance with the relevant provisions, again, of the Territorial Code, and to ensure the maintenance of the free status, particularly after submitting the dossier at the beginning of January. And this time around, we visited all three provinces. With the 2013 mission, we could only visit KZN and Mpumalanga because of time constraints. The findings during the 2014 mission, the OIE was relatively happy with the animal identification progress that had been made. They were, however, concerned because we started identifying or taking animals closest to the infected zone, closest to the Kruger National Park. And their argument is that the risk is actually the animals closer to the free zone, so we should rather start identifying those first. And we have redirected our efforts, and we are now prioritizing the protection zone closest to the free zone. They were also very impressed with the developments in North KZN with regards to fence. Honorable Singh will remember that when we visited, we could only see the grid lines and probably had a pole that was still standing from many moons ago. If I had pictures, I think we actually may have pictures on the presentation. It's looking rather very impressive. The other findings following the mission were the border fence between ourselves and Zimbabwe. Though the fence was intact, there were few breakages. And because of shortage of staff, during the time when we patrolled the fence, I think we were dragging along there for about 30 minutes, or even longer, and we could not identify any of the staff officials who were supposed to be manning the fence. They were greatly concerned about that, and it's being addressed. They were also not happy with the separation of animals in case that where the red line fence is still being built. We are still dipping animals from the protection zone and animals from the free zone at the same dip tank, and they were not happy with that. Clearly that is compromising the integrity of the free zone because you cannot mix two groups of animals with differing health status. They were not happy with the measures that are applied to the abattoirs where animals are being slaughtered from the protection zone. There's clear guidelines in the OIE code, the territorial code, how the meat must be matured and deboned. They advise that we implement it. They're also not happy with the availability of vaccine. And this time around, it is not OBP, it is the ARC OVI that produces foot and mouth disease vaccine. We are currently procuring that from Botswana, and Botswana is the only supplier in the region of the vaccine, and there is clearly demand concerns. And as a result of the Mpumalanga outbreak that has been going on for about 18 months, all the resources with regard to vaccine availability was directed at Mpumalanga, resulting in Limpopo suffering and not getting any vaccine. The Eastern Boundary of Ndumo is also a great concern today. The fence had been erected, but because of the dispute in the area, the community and the Ndumo management have not found a solution that is sustainable yet. The fence keeps being removed because the community owns the land in Ndumo and they want access for their cattle into the reserve and to access the river as well. They were also not happy still with our visibility. Basically, the indication when you are entering the protection zones that you are now entering a foot and mouth disease zone, and just so that the public is aware that there may be some restrictions, even if we don't put them up on the signage. that is currently being addressed. Those were happy with the KZN red line fence. Their concern was that we were not having enough checkpoints where roads go through the gate or through the fence rather, and therefore we're not doing sufficient inspections, and KZN has addressed that. I've already indicated about the animal identification. There was concern about the vacant post over and above the bus vacant post. In KZN, we had realized that the reason that the animals are not inspected as regularly as they should be was because either there isn't sufficient people, or where there are people, there isn't sufficient transportation for them to go to the distance and do the necessary work. KZN and Mpumalanga are addressing that. They're also very concerned with our monitoring of animals after they were vaccinated and whether this vaccination is being effective. We have introduced that. Chairperson, as I indicated, there's a few pictures quickly showing progress. The picture on the left is the fences as we were driving along with the team, and the fence on the right is following the repair that we have done. We've had to redirect our resources from other areas and prioritize this area. And clearly this is not a sustainable way of maintaining the fence, but it has been discussed with public works. With regards to the separation of animals at the deep tanks in KZN, we've agreed that we will separate them by date. From the free zone, they'll be dipped and inspected on different days from the animals from the protection zone. The animals at the abattoirs at slaughter, we have implemented measures to mature the meat and to measure the pH. We have also introduced a standard operating procedure how these animals, as well as the carcasses and offal, should be handled, and that has been concluded and will be effected at the end of the month. With regards to availability of vaccines, we, at the end of the year, we had procured 300,000 doses from Botswana, and half went to Mpumalanga and half went to Limpopo. So far, over 13,000 animals have been vaccinated in Limpopo alone, and Mpumalanga indicated that they would have concluded with the campaign by the end of February. KZN is currently discussing the KZN Agriculture and Rural Development with the community, and they have indicated that they will finalize the construction of the fence by end of June 2015. Construction should have started in February. The other concern was that we have not done surveillance in the two game reserves, and purely because of the terrain, in particularly in Doom. The animals, because of the drought, had gone up north in the swamps, and we were not able to access them to that, immobilize them and take the necessary samples. We will be doing that in the coming months in both the two game reserves. With regards to visibility, we have the three provinces have discussed with their different or respective departments of transport, and initially we started putting up temporary road signs indicating the demarcation between the free and the protection zone. They are now being replaced by permanent road signs to the right. That is the permanent road signs that Limpopo has already procured. They are just waiting for the delivery. And the other three provinces is basically using the same road signs. The only difference, I think, is the color. Limpopo uses the yellow. The other provinces would be using the white road signs. Honorable, staying there are the fences. They are currently standing, colored yellow, deliberately to prevent theft. We have also ensured that the paint that is used is not removable by turpentine. And if anybody sees somebody's yard being fenced with a yellow fence, that is an offense because it is clearly a stolen fence. With regards to the vacant posts, we are currently working on filling of the 25 tradesmen posts who are manning and maintaining the international stand, and that should be concluded by end of March. Mpumalanga has already appointed 5 animal health technicians, and they are advertising a few more posts. KZN is prioritizing contracting animal health technicians and procuring vehicles for those that are currently employed. The OVI and staff are working together to draw up a post-vaccination monitoring program so that we can monitor the effectiveness of the vaccine in those areas. DG has already indicated that Minister, Deputy Minister and herself led Operation Compliance in January, and that was a great success. And it also, I think, assisted in making sure that the OIE sees that we are serious with our foot and mouth disease control, because it was captured internationally. We had in measles in the 3 different provinces that were led by the principals. We also recruited our young and very knowledgeable veterinarian who did a TV interview on the morning show, and this was very successful. And thank you, Chairperson. That is it.
Thank you, Dr. Maja. Honourable members, Chairperson, the next 2 slides just refer to an update on the compulsory community service regulations. I'm told you would have received the presentation. Now, the principal act that deals with, that describes the implementation of the compulsory community services is the Veterinary Paraveterinary Amendment Act of 2012. Regulations as part of our process were drafted and these were gazetted, and there were consultations with various stakeholders, including students of the University of Pretoria. One of the main challenges that we have in terms of the implementation of the regulation has its origin in the Principal Act. Section 20A1 of the Act mandates that any person registering for the first time for the veterinary and para-veterinary profession must perform compulsory community services from the commencement of the Act. Thus, any person, therefore, includes both the vet as well as those in the paraveterinary professions. And commencement refers to when we will have the implementation or the approval of the regulation. DAF has had the intention to take a phased approach, but you would see then from Section 20A1, the implementation would immediately refer to all of the vets and all of the paraveterinary professionals. The intention from that side was to first start with the veterinarians and then move on to the paraveterinary professionals in later years. And these paraveterinary professionals include animal health technicians, veterinary nurses, etc. In an attempt to look at are there any provisions within the Principal Act to allow us to implement these regulations legally, obviously, the unit has considered some of the exceptions provided for in Section 20A, Section 3 itself, where it allows the minister to prescribe circumstances under which persons may be exempted from these compulsory community service provision. There has been consultation between the Veterinary Council, state law advisors who were originally part of the draft of the Principal Act, and that was as recent as January 2015. And again, the matter was referred back to the state law advisor. At the moment, we received last Friday, again, feedback from the state law advisor, and we are still in the process of consulting and considering the opinion received from the state law advisor. What we can say at the moment is that I think the impasse is around the strict interpretation of the word of the term circumstances, because we are looking at certain categories of professionals, whilst the exemption only refers to circumstances. But we do believe that we would be, through further consultation with the state law advisors, that we would be able to find a solution to these regulations without amending the principal act, which you would know it's a much more cumbersome and a long process. So that is where I can conclude the feedback as to where we are in terms of these regulations. So it is work in progress. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The last presentation, OVP.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and Honourable Members, and DJ, and colleagues. I'm going to summarize the presentation, because we did actually come with copies of the presentation. And some of the challenges at OBP, I think the DJ and the Chief Director have well outlined the challenges. And again, I will try to just indicate key points with regard to comments already made. This is my focus area. And I will also comment about the impact of investment of product availability and what are the activities up to date, and also on my final comment on the way forward. But the presentation will be more on the comments which has already been made. With regard to vaccine production, on the slide, what you are seeing there is basically the stages of vaccine production. And the reason why I'm highlighting this website is just to indicate to you the lead time up to final dispatch to the point of sale. So on viral vaccines, you have a lead time of 6 to 8 weeks. And then on bacterial vaccines, majority of them is plus or minus 3 months. So we have a long lead time up until from the time you start producing up until you get the product to the end user. The DG did actually outline some of the challenges that you have with regard to the old equipment and old processes. So the basically what you are looking at is old processes that are still inherent to OBP, and we are trying to move away from that. In the current vaccine production facilities around the world, this process are already outdated, and this is what you can actually use currently. We still use a glassware that we can actually use, but and most of the things that we actually do, especially for disinfection and machine, is still hard labor. On the bacterial side, what you have there, we still produce the 28 bacterial vaccines, diagnostic reagents, and we have different pack sizes with regard to our doses, to cover both the commercial farmers and also the emerging farmers. And you can actually see that with the plant that we have, we still have the very small pilot experimenters and old remitters that they were actually installed in the late 1920s and late 80s. So the process, though it does yield, but I think the yield that we have is not enough for us to meet demand. The subsequent slides are just what the market is currently using for us to be competitive, and this is the direction where we are going. With viral vaccines, we do have the inactivated and viral. So in the language of science, they might call them the first generation vaccines. Most of our products are still first generation vaccines. Again, they come in different doses also to make sure that we are relevant to all sectors of the market. And what I want to highlight is to make the House aware that our production process is open. It's not a closed open, which actually means there is a high level of risk for contamination. That is the reason why we need to move into the closed system. If you look at our vaccine packaging, again, most of our vaccine packaging has been quite old, and we still use hard labor, whereby most of our products are packed manually,
And that has a very serious impact, especially when it comes to final distribution. You can find that the product is available, but now because of hard labor, of picking, it actually delays distribution of the product. Now, if the current slide on clean room certification, the reason why I'm highlighting this is just to make you aware about the importance of having clean air, especially if you have to work with biological products. So currently OBP, because of is an open system, and more importantly, we are currently going through the phase of recapitalization. That has got an inherent risk of contaminating air. And if you look at what are the requirements, we don't even qualify to produce any vaccines. Anonymous cancers, but what is being affected on the issue of air quality, we were supposed to have actually pulled down to make sure that at least we revamp the whole area and disinfect. Now, we know that OV is undergoing revitalization, and that we are thankful to the shareholder by giving us the 492 million over a 3-year period. We did actually receive some money twice a year ago in this year. The project has already begun because the commitment has also made in 2011-2012. And I would like to make you aware that immediately after commitment was made around 2012, there were a procurement which has done around 2012, and it takes a minimum of 18 months to a minimum of 2.5 years to receive some of the equipment. And most of the equipment that we normally procure, them overseas. So the project basically consists of three components: is the upgrade and modernization of the current infrastructure, and also improvement of processes, because you can actually use all processes on new equipment, and more importantly is to change staff. On the phase one upgrade project, we did actually get some equipment which has already been currently installed. I think the last equipment that was delivered about a month ago, and now on the phase two will be only construction of the new facility, and OBP has already appointed a professional team that will actually commence very soon. And there was a comment that OBP's export business has been affected, Honorable Chair, and it's not true. In fact, to the contrary, our export business has comparatively to the domestic has actually shot, did very well in the last few months. We never lost any of our export lines. And if ever you compare it with our domestic market, on percentage-wise, we did extremely well. If ever product were available, I'm sure that we would have actually surpassed budget by far. And on the next slide is we are now in the process of releasing old equipment with new equipment. And as I've already indicated, that, and also the DG did allude that our equipment are quite old. And in 2009-2011 period, we did actually experience a lot of equipment breakdown. And it was for that reason why finally the shareholder decided to start investing in the new facility. And that commitment has been made, and this is now the implementation phase. And we have to move away from the old processes into the new process, because it doesn't make sense for us to use new equipment and still adopt the old processes. We have to make sure that we phase in concurrently on new equipment also on the process, and that actually takes time. And the process of new equipment and breaking down of walls had an impact. And one of the impact was availability of African sickness, gluten, beef mineral, and brucella. And most of the products which were affected was mostly the viral vaccines, which the industry has been complaining to this house all along. And around August 2014, we did actually promise through our media release statement that product will be available around October. And I can say, though we did manage to produce the quantities as demanded by the market, but we did actually keep to our promise of releasing those key products. And initially when we started with around 12 to 13 products, which gave us a serious problem. And out of the 2013, we have 9 now, which has now been resolved. We were able to produce and supply African nose sickness, as indicated, Brucella, Caspar-Taffer, Lambert skin disease, fever, and Pasteurel, because those were some of the key products that were in demand. And of course, our back order was quite huge. We did communicate with the industry and also the shareholder on the 7th of November, the 22nd of December, and recently on the in mid-January 2015. And I would like to make the honour chair that through our communication, not only are we communicating through print media, I've had several engagements with the National Wool Growers Association, and I've recently even had a meeting a week ago with the regional animal health forum on the issue of product availability, just to clarify the importance of making an investment into the facility. Because if you look at the long term, our production costs are quite high, and our base size has been the same over the years. This kind of investment not only will it improve yields, but it will also reduce cost of production, and that will ultimately benefit all farmers, whether they are emerging and commercial farmers. In December, we did a federal lease on gluten free, as was explained by the DG, and we did as well get permission from F86 to make sure that the quantity of gluten free that we have released in December, by the time we release A and B, should be the same quantity of C. And that was actually done, and that's the reason why we released 7,500 of gluten A and B. Currently, we have plus or minus 6,000 units of B and C available, and I've made commitment to shareholders, the National Wool Growers Association, that we will be able to produce the whole unit of A, B, and C, because that's the way we normally sell it. However, there are certain farmers who managed to get A only, some got a C. We still have to manage that process to make sure that those farmers also have the outstanding bottles for them to vaccinate. We do acknowledge the fact that the quantities that have been supplied have not been enough yet, but I think with the slow process of installation of the equipment, that had a serious impact on our production efficiency, because we don't have another production facility anywhere in the country. We've got only one, and any form of disruption of the production efficiency of the production process will have an impact of plus or minus 4 months, and that is what we have been witnessing all along. In the last few months, I know that there's been an issue with regard to African nose sickness. I'd like to say, with African nose sickness, the biggest challenge was around September, October. We were able to supply as we had promised, and more importantly, we had sufficient batches that were also delivered around December, and we do have enough stock. We do acknowledge that there are challenges with regard to access due to distribution points and priorities. We are now have decided to review our distribution strategy with regard to African nose sickness in particular, because the horse industry is affected and they can't actually get a vaccine through their horse. And we are now looking at options of making sure that African nose sickness, because it's one of the key economic diseases, we distribute the product through our biologists via the veterinarians, because those are the ones that are very close to the horse industry. And that will be implemented immediately, Honorable Chair. Brucella, though the small pests are not available as yet, but we do have the 25 dose immediate for release. The stock list is available. And actually being packed, as I said, one of the biggest challenges from our side is medium picking, and that is extra time. And that is what we are currently investing to ensure that we have automated picking system, and that will also increase our yield of supply. Thank you, Chair. I think I would like to make a comment with regard to the way forward. As I already indicated on the equipment that was installed a month ago, the same equipment has to go through validation test so that we can gather enough information on data and to make sure that we introduce it slowly within the company. And every introduction of new equipment and production process, that actually means we can't start with a high yield. We have to start slowly until we reach the point of maximum yield. And I would like to reassure the industry, as I've already spoken to them, that we are on the verge of going into our more than 50% of production, and we can commit that just before June this year, we will be at around 80 to 90% of yield, when most of our equipment have already been bought. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. DG, you wanted to?
Yeah, was on the MOU that the National Wool Growers referred to. That was also on the agenda of our meeting in January. And I think one of the honourable members raised the question of why the relationship with RULAD, Partners of Rural Development and Land Reform, because rural development should not be engaged in on-farm activities. It's more off-farm infrastructure, etc. So anyway, those are that delegation of functions and using the funds that we are entrusted with correctly for our mandate are things that we are sorting out with rural development, and there will be a drastic improvement in the new year. But one of the things that is a challenge is that there's a view among my colleagues that the MOU that hasn't been implemented with DARF, that same MOU is being funded by rural development. And so we can't have sort of double dipping with two government departments. So we are busy, and we are busy clarifying that. That's what to give that, put that on the agenda, not just avoid discussing it. But just come back to share with us. We met with them on the 20th of January, and we will follow up on those matters.
Thank you very much. Member, that was the presentation. Members can interact with the presentation. Honorable Ramakwasi. We'll start with Honorable Mandela because he has forfeited his chance waiting for this presentation. And then followed by Ramakwasi, Honorable Ramakwasi, and Honorable Stein and Honorable Pulemabe. But you know the OBB, you are given money 2013-14 to refurbish your offices or your investment. You know the pace. I think maybe what you must discuss is the pace that you're moving in, because it's not we're not happy with. Maybe it's the pace instead of because this thing that you have, the new machine, has not been cannot utilize it. The pace that we are moving is not helping us. What can be done? But you will respond if you respond to other questions. Let's start with the Honorable Mandela.
Thank you, Chair. We also take the opportunity, like my colleagues, to appreciate all the presentations that have been made thus far. I just want to limit myself, Chairperson, to the National Wool Growers Association presentation, and perhaps the department can clarify some of the issues for me, because I want to really sit as a farmer with sheep in the Eastern Cape, located in the tiny precinct of Mvezo in Mthatha district. And it is very well said that we are exporting to China, Czech Republic, Italy, India, Germany,
Egypt and so forth. Our people sit throughout the year with sheep for the sole purpose. If I have a ritual or ceremony, I've got livestock to slaughter and we eat, and then they have their wool on the cross there. It's eaten by vultures and scavengers and never sees itself to the market. How are we ensuring that these presentations don't only limit themselves in these boardrooms, and we are able to head out to the communities? It's very remarkable the work they do, but to come and only hear about an entity that is located in PE, I think that the visibility itself, for me, is questionable. And particularly when I come from a province like that of the Eastern Cape, where we have about 6 million sheep and 7 million goats, it makes me understand that that province is one of the biggest provinces in terms of meat-producing industry. But what are we doing to ensure that the people themselves and the grassroots are able to access such information, are able to be skilled, are able to gain capacity to be able to produce that wool and get it into the market? We always have this focus and vision of exporting and exporting and exporting. They've listed all kinds of countries here. How can we not focus internally about refining our very own wool? I mean, if you look at the industries that are in Butterworth, East London, and Zimbabwe, they all collapsed because of the international pressures. And how are we going to revive that and produce our own wool and show our own wool, produce our own garments? And we need to look at the process in a holistic manner, not just to get the villagers to produce the wool, it's taken from them, put it to ships, sent to China, it's brought back in a garment, and then we're buying garments from made in China. And it becomes my concern, then, Chairperson, as to what is the department and its true entity doing to reach out to those communities and ensure that there's real empowerment? Thank you, Chair.
No, sorry, I just left out the issue of visibility.
Okay.
And it also is of concern to me in terms of visibility. If you are coming out from PE and you are reaching out to rural communities where a lot of the land is communally owned, and they put a number of about 15,000 people that they are working with in communally owned communities, how are they then building structures? What's the relationship with the provincial house of traditional leaders and the traditional castles there in terms of establishing centers of engagement so that they are able to reach out to those rural communities? So I'd like to understand, how are they reaching out to these 15,000 communal people per se? Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think it is also linked to what Honorable Mandela and yourself have just said around us. I think what will actually assist us in future, we will really have to look at it that our departments, whenever they deal with the issues of service delivery, they first refer to the decisions taken, especially the resolutions of the ruling party, because at the end of the day, there's some laws, so that people understand what do we mean as the ruling party in dealing with the issues of poverty, inequalities, and creation, so that people understand, because sometimes we put such a sense. When you look at what is addressed, it is something outside what the ruling party is thinking of. Okay. That is going to keep our people not portraying that government is delivering, where government is delivering. So the issue of NAMAC, it has been raised by an organized structure, African, what about African Health, a forum, Animal Health Forum. If you have got such a forum, but it's still struggling with marketing, when government has got a specific arm that must deal with us, we still have got a problem, because we shouldn't be sitting with this organized structure and it's still struggling with market, when government is paid so many millions for a structure like NAMAC to deal with that thing. So it's a very frustrating that we have to look into. The second one, Chair, you've just also talked on it. You see, memorandum and this whole issues, it's not very good to always get a report that it's a work in progress. Something is done, we are attending to it. I think we need to look into pronouncements also by the state president. When the state president pronounced that we are now going to apply radical economic transformation, that statement must talk to us to say we do not have sufficient time for work in progress now. They must be limited. We must come to solutions. The bulk of our time must deal with solutions, because when it comes to us, it requires from us to ask now when. And maybe those who came before us have also asked that question, when. The ones who came before them have asked when. And when is not an issue. I am saying this because, Chair, if we are not going to understand that the state president has this day of service, we must deliver to the people, we are still going to repeat the delays that our predecessors have done. Not to say they were not doing, but I'm saying it was time for them to take the things that we must deliver. So let's listen to the pronouncement by the state president, by government, by parliament, to say it wants this. We can't be able to always say. And I would want to differ with you, Gigi, when it comes to the question of, you said you had a meeting with the structure of Animal, but what, this morning, and you wonder why do they come here and say the things. I think, frankly, allow them to come and say them to us. Don't worry. Don't want them to come and maybe praise you and say you are not only doing good things. But just allow them to say them. We know, we in the bottom, we know that this is how it will be dealt with, but under democratic dispensation, don't make them to feel offended to say, hey, it was a mistake to go there, we need not have to go there because... And what makes them to come? It is the same thing that they're saying, because we cannot allow a situation where people will be promised. I think we are a government of unity. The notion of government come and go, but the state remains must work in us. It cannot be a question of, because it was another minister, now it's a new minister, we always start after each and every 5 years, we start new things. It can't be that way. The state remains government come and go. Let's agree that it is a state that must implement, that must deal with issues, and it must be a chain, it must be a chain, it must go. Whether it's this minister or not that minister, let's agree that it must work that way. The other question is to Dr. Mudisan, if I'm not mistaken. 25 restrictions on protocols and policy. Yourself, there are engagements with other countries and so on. My question was to say, is that a policy impediment? If we have to look into the law, we are the lawmakers. Tell us if that the law is impeding the implementation of that funding. Tell us. We are there to deal with it. But if you say there are engagements, it's still leaving the care to say it's engagements at the end of the day, but are going to proceed the law. So that is something that we must look at. The last one, Chair, it is OBT is a fight you present to us. You are reviewing, you are doing, but it can't be forever. No, no, no. the fact to give everything. We must go, we will go. And then, unfortunately, in most cases, we hear the things. When we are there, something opposite comes. We don't see the thing. Because of the response that resume work in progress. So, we are saying now today, make a plan. So that. And then, the last one is on the children issue. Now, I think here, the DG has said it, sometimes you will be avoiding over-shelving. So, production, I think that's a very dangerous thing that we must do. When the demand is high, then we say, let's increase production because our machine is old and then we must do, the people are suffering. It can't be a reason for promoting a problem to the people. That cannot be a reason. It should be a reason to tell us to say, what are we doing? We must provide solutions. Let's deal with solutions, and I want to end the chair.
Honorable State is... Thank you, Chairperson. And also, again, thank you for the department for coming to present. Not Honorable Stein alone, that's worried about the red flame, but as I said this morning to Dr. Morisani, I have an unfortunate or fortunate job to come and represent thousands of people here, and they are asking me constantly, so I'm just asking you what they are asking me, is because they can't be there all the time like the people that are here today. Chair, I will start with the DG because I will follow the program of the presentations. Firstly, I also just want to say, Richie, that I'm not very happy with your comments that I don't bring old things here. I'm really glad that the wool growers kind of showed us the impact of the 2010 disaster with the Rift Valley, and it's not finished. Unfortunately, Dr. Morisani, it's not finished. There's now a report from the portfolio that says we want those reports. That was done by OBP into the Rift Valley disaster. There were two reports. I'm trying to get hold of this report. It's now a portfolio decision that we need to get those reports so that we can see what's going on. I'm not saying it's the fault of OBP. I've never said that. I'm saying we cannot fix something if we don't know what the problems were. So we need to get... If the farmers vaccinated too late, it's their fault. But if the vaccines maybe were not available or something was the problem, we need to fix it. And that's what we need to do. We must take hands and we must fix problems. Chairperson, then I would go to Dr. Morisani and you mentioned something, I wrote it down, the timing of vaccinations. And I think also it was mentioned by the Wool Growers Association, the cycles. And I said it the last time, and I'm so sorry that your CEO is not here because he tried to teach me how it works. I went and learned for myself how vaccinations work and how does it work on the farm. You cannot vaccinate at a certain time, and if the vaccine is not available, it won't work. So this thing of March, I would like to know what the wool growers are saying about it. It's also not good enough to have Bluetongue C available because, as I was told by veterinarians, Bluetongue C is apparently only for older sheep. You cannot vaccinate your newborn with Bluetongue C because it's too stark or something. You will have to start with A and then B and then C. There's a reason why it's an A, B and a C. So I'm very upset around this one bullet point in OBP's document that says OBP in general kept to its promise. You did not keep to the promise. There's still no vaccines available currently, which could have a major impact, like the 2010 Rift Valley outbreak. So I'm sorry, I was calm until I just saw this thing now. Dr. Morisani, you also spoke about efficacy was never issued. We will not know until we get those two reports of the Rift Valley outbreak. And that's why it's important that we do get. I'm also not sure, and the horse industry is not sure, that the African horse sickness vaccine is efficient. That's why I asked the question, how many of the horses that died in the last few years of African horse sickness was vaccinated on a yearly basis? Now, I know that the vaccine does not tell you that the horses will not die or that animals will not die. It is prevention. But then we must have the test done to see if it's still efficient or not. Or on that last time that I was told that there would be a new OBP is busy developing a new vaccine for African horse sickness, and there was some technical thing why it couldn't go into the testing phase. Could we please get an update on that? African horse sickness vaccines was developed in 1953, my memory serves me right, so I think, you know, might see some changes in the now. Then, back to the, if there's a Dr. Morisani mentioned something, if there's an outbreak of Rift Valley fever again and the agreement with Trey Gardner, I couldn't pick up what you were trying to say. If you are on a stage where there is some discussions with them or not, or what is the current thing. And then also from the DG, the MOU, I'm not sure what is the problem with the MOU. It is busy in discussion since 2013, if I'm correct, or 2012. Why is it taking so long? And I know you've mentioned something now between the Department of Rural Development, but why can't the Department of Agriculture not sign a MOU? Why does it be rural development? Is it not part of your food security plan? I'm asking. It's difficult to try and understand why things are taking 2 to 3 to 4 years. Dr. Matter, the OIE, congratulations also. I think your most ardent supporter in this thing. I'm very happy that it's happened. I'm still concerned looking after all the findings that they were not happy with. I'm glad that we made it. But I think we will have to pull up our boots, and we need, and it was one of the requests last time when you brought me the OIE or to the portfolio, the OIE, the full report, and the response from the department when I said that, Chairperson, we need to get an update, because on that there were a whole thing, a lot of things that lacked. I'm not just focusing on the foot of mouth. I'm talking about the whole capacity within the department, the provincialization, and all the methods that needs to go at. So I think it needs to prioritize that sometime the department needs to come back and give us a full report. Because if you look at all the things that the OIE found that's lacking, I think it's all linked to the outstanding issues and methods that needs to be sorted out by the department. I wanted to ask, I don't know whose responsibility, I'm sure it must be OBP's responsibility on the import of the foot and mouth vaccines. I was looking at a number. Are we getting enough? Can Botswana supply us? And I still want you to explain to me, we're getting like samples and then we permitted this at OBP, or we get a whole batch from Botswana. So I'm not sure if I'm making sense, but I want to know if Botswana would be able to do that. And then it would be the department that needs to answer me on the IRC-OVI foot and mouth vaccine that they are developing. I know that also we were giving them a whole lot of money, Dr. Morisani, I'm sure you were listening. The IRC-OVI development of foot and mouth vaccine, how far are we in that process? And when will we be able to produce our own vaccines? And why does it not sit with OBP, because as far as I can understand, OBP doesn't do development of vaccines, and if that's correct. Then, Chair, I just need to ask about the compulsory community services. I'm still shocked. I'm still shocked that in 5 years, the only piece of legislation that passed through the previous committee was this one, and that there's words that now causes massive problems. I changed my hair color, but I think I'm still bummed. I don't understand what is the issue. If a minister must write those regulations, which was a massive debate last time, when we wanted to pass this piece of legislation, because we actually didn't want the minister to do the regulations. And I think it's also maybe a very good learning curve for this new committee chair. He sits and fights for days about words. Now we see how it's important to have the right words. So the state law advisors chair, I think, must come and explain to this committee why it's a problem. I really don't know. We need these people on the ground. There's a massive shortage of practitioners on the ground, and we cannot sit and fight here around words, which I'm sure we can find a solution to. Chairperson, then, this is definitely on that shoulders. I received this research document from our own researcher here, but I've also seen it before. It's not the first time that I see it. In this is a table on African war sickness outbreaks that was reported to the OIE. This is laughable. It's laughable. I've just been on this communication with the African war sickness people. To say that in 2013 there were two new outbreaks, one animal died, it's absolutely nonsense. Where is this stuff coming from? And that's why I asked earlier about the reporting. And maybe I'm now shooting our own industry in the foot again, but we can't export it anyway. I know, and I couldn't find it here, but I asked Minister Tina Debatt-Petition a question about 2 years ago about horses that died. And even that answer was shocking, but it was at least better than this one. So are we trying to show underreport on African horse sickness and other diseases? Because I even went to check other diseases that we're supposed to report on. And we just don't report on it. So I want to find out from Dr. Mansani or the DG who is responsible to report, and I will give you this report, DG, who is this supposed to report to the OIE on diseases that, what this, I don't know what is this, that stands in there, that we are supposed to declare, or what, for a lack of a better word. That's enough here, I'm
feeling angry. But before you finish, can you draw nonsense?
No.
Withdraw it, Honourable.
It doesn't make sense. Withdraw nonsense.
Friends, I'm not going to go a lot into the technical stuff because I'm sure that members of the department do acknowledge that members of parliament are not necessarily trained in the field of agriculture. So all we do, we rely on the inputs that we have been given. So the first thing that I think the department must do when they write acronyms, they must write them in full. So, I mean, well, I'm a member of parliament, and you know, we don't come here on the basis of qualifications. We come here on the basis of what our parties desire to come and do. So if you write FMD, I mean, I don't know what is FMD. Try and write food and mouth disease so that it's easier. Then next time when you mention it, then you can go on like that and use the acronym. But to use the acronym from the first page and continue like that, by the time you reach the middle of the document, Honorable Chair, you are lost. You don't really know what you are dealing with. But I want to just deal with what would be the low-hanging fruit in the context of the work of the department. And I think the same question came when we were dealing with the racing association. You see, in the organization that I come from, the constituency I represent is mainly the youth. Now, the critical thing that we must help each other do is to address the social challenges of our people. Now, I've looked at the various presentations. We are lagging on talking about jobs. How many jobs are we creating in the things that we are doing? Whether it's the OBP, because I see there's quite a lot of, I mean, there's, without the thorough appreciation of engineering, I can see that there's a lot of plants that have been either manufactured or being refurbished and all of it. And I think all of those, the recapitalization program that you are carrying out, we should be able to bring on board young artisans. And in our own report, we should be able to make a statement that this is the number of jobs that we are creating. These are the number of training opportunities that are there. And I see one report has attempted to do that, to deal with the upskilling of people. Because when the ruling party talks about the creation of jobs, it means all of its government departments must be focused on that work. And I think on agriculture, I mean, for instance, if the racing association says that they've declined from the 100,000 jobs that they've had in the past, the department should be saying what kind of intervention needs to be done to make sure that we at least restore the numbers to where they were. But not just jobs, sustainable jobs, because the graph must not keep on going down. This year you create 100 jobs, when you come back next year there are 50, because those were jobs just to do public awareness when you were doing this foot and mouth disease, trying to educate people about it. So I felt that it is a very important point, but please with you, Honorable Chair, that let's make it a standard thing. When the department briefs us across their entities throughout the work they do, let us brief on the jobs that have been created, the training opportunities that are there, the SMMEs that have been developed as well. Because that, if that does not constitute a critical part of our oversight, we will be failing constituencies out there that are expecting us to transform the state to be able to resolve their challenges.
Thank you, Honorable Youngblood.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Honorable Mabi, I just want to tell you that last year I have requested the department officials to draw up a list of all the acronyms, because I've had the same kind of problem, and I was assured by the DDG that they will give us a list of acronyms, because there are so many you can't keep track of it. I would like to get clarity on something which pops up in the research paper, our own parliamentary research team, with regards to transformation in the wool sector. Now, I see here that there is a program which talks about upgrading and marketing support and genetic improvement of communal flocks and training and mentorship. And then there is something which really, really bothers me, and I would like to have clarity on that. It says that communal farmers, emerging farmers, are unable, not want to, they are unable to tap into and exploit the opportunities that exist within the commercial livestock development sector. I would like to know why are they, what are the factors that makes it impossible for them to tap into that. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Members. You wanted to ask questions? Okay. Hang on then. Yeah, you are going to respond. You are going to respond to questions. You cannot ask questions. So you are going to answer our questions as we've raised as members of parliament. Is it clear? Honorable Singh, what is it?
Sorry, Chair, I was so upset when I saw all this that I forget. There's just one last thing, and I was reminded, also the wool growers mentioned it, your communicating strategy. I must say, dear Chair, I was not impressed that in January, I can keep you the dates and who the people were that I spoke to in OED. Even Mr. Dr. Morisani said he would come back to me. I spoke to the DDG. And I received a letter in writing to say that the OBP will respond, and then there was this general notice on 12th of January that said nothing about the availability of vaccines. I think OBP really needs to work on their communication strategy. It's not good enough to put a massive, massive industry on hold, and then I see in general you give the promise. You are sending out general notices that reprinted, and even the first one in October was on the previous year's date. So you cut and paste, please just do it properly in the future. I can just say that. I was not impressed.
Okay, thank you. Before the department responds to the questions, let me add some issues. One is in one of your documents, you are saying that you are going to implement compulsory services veterinary services in 2015, and this is 2015. Just want to know where have you started. but the second issue is on Wool Growers Association. When you responded to my question on the labor that you source in Lesotho, you said yes, but I didn't get it. What is it? How far are you in making sure that you train South Africans to take over the job as agreed with the previous portfolio committee? The OVP, we have met with the Wool Grower Association in December, and their complaint was that your time for what is the word? Bring the vaccine on the market, available in the market. It's not in line with how farmers supposed to vaccine their stock. So we have to get the balance, because it's not about how much you produce, it's about what the production that you produce, does it make impact? It's not about the number of the vaccines that you produce, it's the impact that must be felt on the ground. And as for us to be able to get your stakeholders to do their work, it's when the department responds to their issues in a smart way, quicker way. So now, every now and then when we meet with them, one has to know. Because issues that are raised by Honorable Mari are the key critical issues that this government is focusing on. And government departments are supposed to service its stakeholders for them to be able to work and produce more jobs, build SMEs, and do away with the unemployment. So if you can get even the vets, are we succeeding in getting to, at some point we're talking about collaboration with the private vets so that we get the service rolling on ground. So if we can get clarity to say, are we hands-on on the matters? And maybe as a chair, of course Dr. Madou might say, I chair only jealous. He has not congratulated us. So, and well done the department. That's what we expect from you. And we want you to do more in with regard to your mandate. But you see, OVP, I'm coming back to you. Treasury has given us money, 2013, 2014. Now we are towards the end of 2014-15. And it was for 3 years. So, at the same time, when we engage with the department, they want us to lobby Treasury to give you more money to produce more vaccines for, so that this compulsory community services can work. So, how do we go and tell Treasury that they must give you another money when you're seated with the money? Why are you not moving? Because I couldn't get anybody talking about what is the challenge. Why are you not moving with the seat that is required? Whether you're supposed to refurbish, you order internationally, it takes time. What is the challenge? If you can get that clarity so that we're able to understand why you can't move. And Honorable Sain has raised important issue that ARC at some point, they tell this committee that they are doing research on food and mouth disease. We ask the question, why are you not working with OVP? So they were telling us, no, it's just a research. But because we are dealing
with disease management, it must get it. How far are they? If you have the answer, if you don't have, you can package that into the next meeting. So then department can let's start with the Wool Growers Association. There were questions that were raised by members. They must respond, and then the department will be the last.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I firstly want to respond to Honourable Mandela's question about the exporting. Now, for better background, South Africa produces almost 3% of the world's wool. And we are currently or mostly involved in the apparel side of wool. Now, the apparel is clothing, so we are more or less producing about 16% of that wool, if I'm correct. And then you've got the coarse type of wool, which are usually made for or used for carpets and curtains. Now, we must accept the fact that China is probably the biggest selling point for Australia's wool. Australia produces almost about 90% of the world's wool, and about 60% of Australia's wool is also going to China. And we are a bit luckier that a lot of our wool is only also going to Europe, the countries that was measured. This is a very relative question as to why we export and then import the clothing. And I think the short answer is that we are not competitive enough worldwide. And I'll give you the reason for that. As we've got currently about two processing plants in Port Elizabeth, Govan Hills and there's another one also, and Cape Okudo. And these two plants are running almost less than 50% of capacity. And the reason is that they cannot compete with the prices internationally. So it's a free market auction, and we've got international buyers there, and we cannot compete with the various lot of reasons that they cannot compete of. And it has to be mentioned that the labor rules are perhaps one of the reasons. Another big factor is that two big plants in the Western Cape closed down over time, and the one was Estex and the one was SA Fine. This is two processing plants that usually produce the garments in South Africa. And again, it seems to us that they were not competitive enough with the international community. So, Mr. Mariana is right, is that that is obvious the right way to go, but we are international role players and we have to deal with international rules about this. But this is roughly the answer, Honorable Mandela, that we, I don't think really can compete. And I'd like to put an invitation to yourselves, to the committee, to come and visit us in Port Elizabeth, to see for yourself how this wool industry is operating. And we would like to invite you as a committee to come and have a look at it, because I think we are a world entity and we produce one of the biggest quality wools. I also want to react to, I hope I answered the question, Honorable Mandela, about why we are here. And I think, Marashe, you have also answered the question to the DG, that we are invited here, and we've got a good relation with the department, and we want to keep it like that. We actually met with the Deputy Minister in August, and we and Grain South Africa, and we mentioned the issue of the MOU, and he was also very surprised that it's not picked in. And we had a meeting on the 20th January with the DG, and I've got full confidence that we will be now some progress with the current DG. And we are here on the invitation on the meeting with the Honourable Minister in December, and as you said, that's one of the reasons perhaps that the availability of the vaccines was out of time. We as industry need the vaccines in October, and we need the vaccines in January, February. And that wasn't available, and that was our biggest concern. So it's not like putting an electric light on and off and says now we can inoculate and now we cannot inoculate. We are in a production system in South Africa, and it's due to the climate conditions of our country that we have to comply with certain production areas, and that's why we are. Well, we were not happy with it. About sharers, yes, we have agreement with you that we will try. The issue is that work is being classified as a critical and scarce skill, and we had an agreement with the Department of Home Affairs, and I think they are happy, and we are happy that we are on track over a period of time to really to make it work that we train enough sharers in the shortest possible time to get less to use less illicit citizens for the sharing. I know that BKB, one of the world brokers, have initiated a big program with Kuga, something like that, where they have got now specific roles in mind to train sharers, and they are the biggest brother in South Africa. But if you come and visit us, this will be all the information, and we will make sure that you get all the information from all the sectors. But I'd like to give Dr. Charlotte a chance to react to OEP's issue. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I think the DG is correct that we met in January, and here we came on the invitation from the committee. But I think also it's important that we get enough information for the farmers to be able to plan, because if the few refurbishments that have happened so far have been so impactful on the industry, with the more work coming through going into the future, what does that mean for the farmers? What do they need to plan for? How do they need to organize themselves so that they're able to survive those 2 years when vaccines may not be available? Are there contingencies? What is it that we are planning to do to cover the period? And I think that's why this is very important and it becomes quite critical for the farmers, so it cannot be discussed enough.
Honourable Chair, I will be very brief and short. Firstly, on Honourable Mandela's indication of the numbers of livestock in the Eastern Cape, and they only produce about 30% of the consumption, so there's a huge role for us to play in terms of training and mentorship, obviously looking at stocking rates, looking at management of natural resources. We had a study done about 10 years ago by the Agricultural Research Council, which was part of our genetic improvement program, and there is about 750,000 hectares of land that is not, the arable land that is not planted under crops, and they have indicated that if we are to plant those hectares with the planted pastures, we will be able to double the stocking rate, the carrying capacity of the Eastern Cape, and it will change the Eastern Cape and South Africa from a net importer of red meat to a net exporter of red meat. So there's a huge challenge with us, take us with government, to see if we can make that possible. Then how do we communicate with people on infrastructure and so on? Well, with government, with the department, it could be a local municipality funding or the provincial department or whoever who funds the infrastructure. We will set up a meeting with community and we will have discussions, and eventually the indication will come from them where the shed should be or the infrastructure should be erected. And this is how we do it. And then to reach out to all farmers, we have 15,000 farmers. So, well, there's actually 20,000. We really don't have the capacity to reach out to everybody, but we organize them into wool growers associations that we can work with them as a group. Then they do participate in all levels of decision-making of our organization. We are truly a representative body of us, as I have said. Our members are both black, communal, and emerging, and commercial. And these farmers sit on our national management, they sit on Cape Wool's board of directors, and they sit on the Wool Trust as well.
So they participate in decision making. They also have their own congresses in the Eastern Cape where they have resolutions. And one must remember that that's part of our challenge is to assist and also to be able to manage these structures effectively and communicate with government structures and those appropriate to resolve them and assist them with their solutions. Then in terms of commercialization of these livestock, farmers, communal, not accessing the commercial sector, I think this is not really true for the wool industry. There are many commercial producers. We have statistics that show that we have communal sheds that produce wool of a better quality than the national average, and we see the national average as the level of commercialization, and we have more than 150 sheds that already comply to that guideline. So they certainly can access the commercial market. What we have engaged now into is to establish cooperatives. I know that government has tried to establish many cooperatives. I have heard figures of 70,000, out of which 95% have not succeeded. What we have done now is we have identified the top communities producing wool, one in each of the district municipalities of the Eastern Cape. We have already trained our production advisors in the principles of cooperatives, and it was done by the Institute for Cooperative Development at the University of Fort Hare. Then these communities have to voluntarily participate in this program to say they want a cooperative. They have now all agreed to do that. We will engage in the training now for these communities. And then the idea would be that our production advisor will remain with them for at least 3 to 4 years as a sort of a mentor to make sure that they manage their cooperatives correctly. And that is moving to a level of commercialization that I'm very excited of. And if we are successful with this program in only 5 communities, we then are going to roll it out to an additional 5 communities for each of the district municipalities. Very clear, I think I'm going to stop there.
Thank you very much. Mr. Police from NAMAC, can you respond to how does this World Trust operate and other questions that you've been raised?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, the PG and my colleagues. I am sitting chair in almost all, all the boards of the trust. Currently we have 12 agricultural industry trusts, and the wool trust is one of them. Indeed, Chairperson, I've been talking to the previous Honorable Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, the previous Minister, the way how the trust operates to deal with different issues, one which is transformation, marketing, and so on. And how can we help, you know, the smallholder farmers in our communities? And so I've raised quite a number of issues with the wool trust. And I think Mr. De Beer from NWGA is aware of some of the issues that are raised with the wool trust in terms of, one, how they operate as a trust, but also in terms of the NWGA as an industry organization helping all the farmers, the growers. The Honourable Member raised an issue around, you know, the transformation in the sector or in the whole sector. And I've been raising this thing quite some time, you know, within the platforms of the wool industry, from the board of the wool trust, and I've already said to say some of the things that they are doing are not really helping in terms of transformation in the industry. Number one, as much as they are saying that they want to help the smallholder farmers we have been concerned, and you're not aware about that. Part of my work, I'm not only an agricultural chief sitting in the office, but I go out and meet the smallholder farmers. And some of them are the members of the growers. And we're saying to them, it's important that when they have the smallholder farmers, the support that they provide must be genuine support. I'm going to talk about one program which Leon spoke about, and Mr. Foslow, the one of the rent program. And I've been saying this in the board of the World Trust. It's a good program. They are doing very good work. There's no doubt about it. I visited some of the sharing shares with them around Eastern Cape. But the rent program itself, there are some small problems, which I don't know whether that was the reason why the provincial department pulled out into supporting them. Some of the farmers, they opted to go and buy their own rent because they are complaining that the rent that we're getting from NWGA are the inferior. Remember, NWGA is funded by World Trust, where I'm sitting, where the President of the Business Assembly approved. And I raised those things with them. Now, how do we then, as a department, continue to support that program? It's a good program, but they need to do it right. Number two, if we're talking about transformation in the wood industry, it must not only be we use our black smallholder farmers to produce wood, but it's important for them to participate in the whole wood chain. What I'm trying to say here, Honorable Chair, if for example they are using the breeders, you know, to work on the rams that are going to be supplied to the communal farmers, it is important therefore that some of the smallholder farmers need to be trained to be the breeders, because that's where government money is going. It's going to the breeders. The people who get money in the process are the breeders. So it's important therefore that they need to participate in the whole chain. Another problem is that we are talking here about the wool production. We understand the problem is raised by, you know, Mr. Prislow. But I think also the beneficiation is critical. Because the industry, I think, might do at some point still controls, whether you like it or not. We're talking about the 100% export of the product. But then who is actually benefiting the whole foreign exchange when the product is exported to Europe, wherever the place will be, who's getting the euros? And therefore, transformation in the industry is critical in the whole revolution. And I hope that my colleagues won't say offense. What I'm saying, they heard about it, I've been saying consistently in the board. But not only supporting the farmers, also in terms of having the black people participating in the value chain. I had a discussion with the board around November, December. I'm sure you heard this, Leon. I've been complaining about the structures of cables. It can be correct that at this point in time, you don't have black people within cables. I'm talking about executive level. And as you're saying that, I'm not talking about the board. I'm talking about the full-time employees, people within cables. The black people will be taking care of the smallholder farmer interests. And raise those things. I know now they're also in the minutes of this coming by this meeting that they're attending. And it's important that we will talk about it. The issue of marketing, quite right, Mr. Foslow, is that it's competitive. Whether we like it or not, we are competing globally. and therefore, whatever market that they're exploring, you need to know that you have other competitors that might actually, you know, be able to compete with you, and might be a winner, might be a loser. But it's important, therefore, to do your proper market research, which I think that's what we're doing on our side. Probably to answer what the Honorable Member Mandela was saying, to say that if you look at good Eastern Cape, a lot of small rural farmers are the wool producers. But in reality, the product goes. So it requires some market research, which I agree with you. So maybe just pause there, Honorable Chair. I think these are a few issues that have been just raised, you know, in relation to what my colleagues have been saying from the NWGA. And I'm sure they can also respond if they want to. Thank you so much.
No, thank you so much. I think the important thing is that we understand how the trust should work or supposed to operate. So we would then, through yourself, have interaction with all the 12 trusts and would then invite them with the specific transformational outcomes that will need them to come and book the committee. We'll do that. And thank you very much for the information. Mala or Sister Major, did you want to take them on? We don't have much time. To the issues on the other side. African Youth Board. And just a couple of the questions that belongs to you, and I'll do it to you all the way.
Thank you, DG. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. I will quickly attempt to respond to Honorable Steyn's question with regards to reported incidents with the OIE. We normally do not report, maybe let me just start by indicating that we have a process on how diseases are reported to DAF. And we will appreciate that DAF will also not want to report to the OIE and therefore to trade partners on ESA. And that is why that system was put in place. We acknowledge that there is under-reporting of not just horse sickness, but all diseases that are even notifiable. So there is a gross under-reporting. But what we normally do, we report events. We do not report individual cases as cases. So we would report, for example, in Gauteng, in more or less a part for argument's sake, there would be an event with 17 horses affected. We would report it as one event. And if the 18th horse gets affected but is still part of that event, it does not report it separately. We would just update the OIE. And basically, that is how the reporting is done.
Thank you, DG. Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Maybe I should start by addressing the question raised by Honorable Rompase on the restrictions and the laws. The understanding is that normally the laws of the country, the laws that govern MR Health, are enabling. But the problem becomes when there is a requirement to export a particular commodity, then we have to take into consideration the laws of the importing country. And those are the ones that normally determine what needs to be done. Therefore, as a result, we come up with what we call protocols that will enable us to be able to export that particular commodity. And it goes the same to the question that was also asked by Honorable Steyn on the issue of Rift Valley fever, where I also referred to negotiations. So when the horse industry presented, they said, they indicated that the actual non-tariff barrier for export is
African horse sickness, meaning that the other countries come up with laws. They are too scared to import anything from us because of the presence of African horse sickness in South Africa. In the case of wool, the countries mentioned by the wool growers, the other countries were too scared to import wool from South Africa because they thought that they would import risk by fever by importing the wool from South Africa. We may be knowing from our side that the virus will not be in a position to survive on the wool. That is why we would go into negotiations with them to try and convince them that the commodity is safe. There was a question also from Honorable Stein on the issue of why is foot and mouth disease vaccine with the ARC OVI and why is it not the OPP? There was also a question on where are we. The feedback that we received related to the challenges that the OVI experienced on a Stikvorst Veterinary Institute, Honorable Mabi, where the fact that the vaccine was also getting contaminated, therefore the virus was not able to grow beyond a certain point. So they had to revamp the whole manufacturing process to see where the problem is. They have found the problem and they have started producing, but they are still producing very little for us to be able to vaccinate the 500,000 head of cattle that we need to vaccinate every year. Therefore, we still procure from Botswana, but we had all sorts of indications that very soon that we will be able to produce our own vaccine. That is the report that coming from the Agricultural Research Council, OVI. The reason why it is not with OBP and it is with the OVI, the production of foot and mouth disease is a very easily transmissible disease. If they can be manufactured at the same facility with OBP, there is a danger that the vaccine that OBP is aiming for valley fever, for anthrax and so on, might contain particles of the FMD vaccine. And it will create a lot of problems for us in the country. So that's why all the transboundary animal diseases are only manufactured at the TED Transboundary Animal Disease Institute at the OVI, completely secluded, and the biosecurity is very high there compared to the other institutes. So we cannot combine the two institutes with production of foot and mouth disease and the other vaccines. And there was also a question on the number of horses that may have died but were vaccinated. It's a very long debate, and I don't want to get into that because normally there is a belief that if an animal is vaccinated against a particular disease, it will automatically develop some protective immunity. It is not always the case. And that is why vaccines normally, under normal circumstances, only reduce the risk of contracting the disease. And under very high infection pressure, even if the animals have been vaccinated, they may contract some of the diseases that we are trying to prevent them from contacting. And that doesn't only point out to vaccine efficacy. It is also related to the whole, a number of factors related to the animal factors, the environmental factors, and it's normally a triangle, host, environment, and the agent itself. So it is possible that sometimes we may have vaccines that are supposed to be protective that are not supplying enough protection because of the handling and issues. But of course, it is normally of big concern if an animal has been vaccinated against a disease and then it is developing a disease. It is a point that is worth being investigated. I think I have addressed the issues that were raised by by the members. Thank you. There is the CCS one.
I can deal with that one. The on the one on the community.
Before you start, there is a team that is coming. They got a meeting at 1, so they give us 5 minutes to wrap up. If you can do that within that 5 minutes.
All right. I think I welcome the idea of the committee inviting the state law advisor. As we've reported before, the state law advisor advised us on the action legislation. And now when we bring up the regulations on the legislation, they're having a different view. So I think it's really important to engage with them. The other comment was on not using acronyms and abbreviations. I think the committee has asked it, and it's standard practice, you don't use them, so we apologize for that. I will make sure that doesn't happen again. And we didn't report on jobs because we have interpreted the quite literally in terms of what we were asked to come and do. But when we, on Friday, when we report to the committee on our response to the SONA, we all talked to the job creation and the fact that it was a labor force survey that was released that actually year on year, month on month, jobs were created in the sector. And just also to the honorable member assurance, on this MOU, I don't think we are being tardy and bureaucratic about it. There were some issues that were raised in the meeting with the colleagues that we could attend to immediately. For example, there was a course that they wanted to get accredited with AgriCETA for the training of extensionists, and we said, we will support that, and we did that immediately. But I think in terms of if they are in an agreement with the with rural development, it's important for us to engage with rural development, say what are the lessons that are learned from that, and how do we take it forward, we take that one forward. I don't know, there was something on Sherry, it seems as if we probably have to keep the conversation with OBC going, because the questions that were raised here about the efficacy of the medication on the communications issues, because I think they about the trust issues between OBC and the industry, and I think we would like to intervene in that space because we have communicated that to OBC as well. I mean, they put out a statement, we have issued 1 million units. It doesn't help to say just 1 million units if you don't say, but what is the need? What is the population? How many units are actually needed? So what they started to do is to provide the minister at least with the notes behind the bullet points on the bulletin. So let's come back to you on those. I think it's far more, it's complex. I think we actually have said, yes, things aren't perfect. OBP is saying they are going to do some transition, etc. So I think let's come back on some of those questions. I'm not sure that there were, I think it was just the OBP matters and the efficacy of the drugs that is still outstanding according to my notes, dear Chairperson.
Okay, I think with the jumping between wool issues and hot issues, there were three questions asked of the industry that I picked up, but with your permission, I'm quite happy, everybody's out of time, I'm quite happy to give a written submission on the questions that came out of the discussions, with your permission.
Let's do that. Let's get the written submission. Honorable Zin?
Chair, and if I could also ask the department if we could get a written submission of which exports are currently stopped because of diseases, because I've been told the other day that we can't export beef to USA, and I didn't even know it, so, and it's also because of diseases. I think it's important, Chair, that we get that. I will find out in any case.
Can we agree that information department share with us all the information? And I want to take this opportunity to thank particularly members of the industry we have invited MDG, these are our stakeholders. It's not your stakeholders alone. It's our stakeholders. We've called them, we wanted information. And we're still going to call them several times. thank you very much for coming, and DJ and your team. Thank you very much. We'll continue to communicate with yourselves, particularly because, as the DJ has indicated, agriculture has been, it's been identified as one of the key drivers of this economy. And ourselves, yourselves, and the department, we have to collaborate to make sure that indeed we drive agriculture such that it responds to the needs of the economy, and we produce jobs that is required, we produce food that is required. Agriculture is everything. Food, clothes, you can name them. And if this sector can start to do things in a different manner, indeed it can contribute massively to the growth of our economy. Thank you very much, for coming to the meeting. The meeting is adjourned.